across the UK, online and on DAB.
We are Talk.
Talk Radio. Give it some lip.
Talk Radio.
The pre-show ritual of... that was one of my shoes coming off, although it sounded like a leg dropping off. The pre-show ritual of the studio being changed, the lights being darkened, shoes and other clothing coming off. This is Talk Radio.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
I'm all thumbs, yeah. No action, attention deficit distraction. Yeah. My brain operates on a fraction. All thumbs, no human interaction. Yeah. I speak in typos, predictive text it. I spell checked it. I stand auto correct.
Thing is, when you die, you don't get that noise. That's the problem. What was I listening? Where did I? When you die, the life support machine. That's Imani Coppola, by the way, who isn't on the show tonight, but will be on the show maybe Thursday or Friday. I don't know. Tonight after midnight, we've got Sean Levy on, who wrote a brilliant book about Jerry Lewis, which has just been reissued on ebook of all things, the Kindle. There are other ebooks, aren't there, available to one. And I cannot... let me correct myself. I was going to say I cannot see the attraction of them. I can see an attraction of them. The attraction being you can carry like 100 books in your bag at once. But I would actually try... Oh, wait, 444-999-1000, by the way. I would actually try and carry the 100 books in my bag, rather than have, it's only a wafer thin piece of plastic and liquid crystal display. Also, you can't get second-hand books, can you, on the old Kindle? You can't get second-hand books. You can't go into your local Oxfam or Marie Curie and rifle through their digital collection and then plug your e-reader, is that a thing, into and say, well, could you download these second-hand books, please, and with annotations in the margin? You can't do that, so I cannot see. And I like to turn the page. Have they made, here we go, this is something for the dragons. Have they made an e-reader that is shaped like a book? You know, in the 80s, right, you would get the VHS video covers that looked like they were leather-bound books. And they weren't. They were just cheap brown plastic that looked like leather-bound books. The problem was you could only get them for VHS. And, of course, we had Betamax, so not a lot we could do about it. But my uncle had it. My uncle, who I don't talk to anymore now because he's a coward of a man. They had it, and we thought they were so posh because all their VHS videos looked like they had loads of weird leather books. So have they made a Kindle that looks and feels like a book? So you hold it with two hands and you have to open it. Have they done that? Man alive. Oh, God. It comes to something when first caller of the night is Paul talking about wearing a nappy and with his mate Shane. I mean, it really does, doesn't it? Doesn't it? 0844 499 1000 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. My name is Ian Lee. I will sit here and I will just spew words out of my mouth hole. And you are welcome to join in or not, as the case may be. As I say, we've got a guest at midnight. Let me let you into a little secret. Come closer to your speakers, dear listener. I ain't got nothing for today. Now, normally I come in and I say, I ain't got nothing, but there's a couple of ideas floating around in my head. I literally enter the studio this evening a husk of a man in terms of creativity and ideas. Nothing has happened to me today. Literally nothing has happened to me today at all that I can come in and talk about. I went outside 20 minutes before the show to see if something might happen to me. Nothing happened. Literally nothing happened, which is the title as well of Joseph Heller's very disappointing sequel to Catch 22. 0844 499 1000. Let's get this out of the way. Yes, Paul.
Hello.
Oh, it's not you, Paul.
Hello, my name's Paul Akinbola.
Right. Oh, is it Paul Akinbola?
Yeah.
Or is it not? Yeah. Is it?
Man, yeah.
How come you... How do I say this without sounding brusque? I can't, so I'm just going to dive in. You don't mind if I dive in, do you, Paul?
Yeah. I just sent in the messages
How come you spoke so clearly at the very beginning of this conversation?
Well...
Normally you sound quite muffled, shall we say. Turn your radio. It definitely is you. Turn your radio off, Paul Akinbola.
Okay. An idea, but iPod duo.
Yeah, it's you and Shane dressed up in nappies, and at the end of the concert, you got poo and wee in your nappies. You've told me that about 20 times.
Yeah.
I can tell you now, Paul. The nappy bit is what's going to hold you back.
Yeah?
Why don't you just wear trousers? Or shorts? Or dungarees like Chris Cross? Jump. Yeah. Jump.
Yeah.
Well. I don't want to wee-wee on your chips. Why would anyone want to wee-wee on someone's chips? But I just think you've got too many chips and you need to have a little bit of wee-wee on some of them, Paul. The nappy thing ain't going to work. Hey, Paul, shall I try and cross the streams? Do you know the phrase cross the streams?
Yeah.
From Ghostbusters, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm going to cross the streams. Shall I do it?
Yeah.
Paul, say hello to Alan.
Hip, hip, hip.
Hello, Alan. I would like Bob Mills to be back on the screen.
He's talking to you, Alan.
I haven't got a clue what he's talking about.
And I bet you ain't got a clue what you're saying either.
I would like Bob Mills to be back on the screens.
Bob Mills?
He's on every Sunday evening.
He's on. He's been filling in as well for John Holmes.
Yeah.
He's good, Bob Mills. I met him the other day properly. We shook hands and had a little chat. He did the excellent TV series In Bed With Me Dinner, which was excellent.
And he was the presenter of Games World as well.
Of Game Judge.
He should have been... When?
Now I know why you're not meant to cross the streams, because it just turns into a car crash.
My Life of GO5 launched on Channel 5.
Yes.
But if one show was, it was an awful show, with a like Bob Mills to took over from In White and
Wyndham.
Life of GO5.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Paul Akinbola. I'd like Bob Mills to be on the TV more. What you just heard, the last 2 minutes of radio, is what my head has been like all freaking day. Penny, stay there. We'll come to you in a second. Alan Caddick.
Hip, 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 sir.
Hip, 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 sir.
Oh, so it's been a boring day for you, then.
Well, nothing's happened for the last couple of days. Nothing. I went and took my dog to the vets and they looked up her vagina.
Oh, no.
But there's not really a lot of comedy in my dog's vagina. I'm bringing her in next week, my dog.
I'll be interested to see on the periscope.
No, it won't be boring. It'll just be a dog. You can't touch it and it stinks.
What sort of dog is it?
Still, nice vagina. That's what the vet said. It's an old lady's dog.
A Jack Russell?
A Westie.
Oh, a Westie. I've never seen a Westie.
You've never seen a Westie? Yes, you
never.
Have. Yes, you have.
No, I haven't.
Yes, you have.
I've seen a staff and an Alsatian,
yeah,
a Jack Russell and a Corgi, but never a Westie.
Yes, you have.
No, I haven't.
Have you ever seen an old lady walking a white dog?
Isn't that a Chihuahua?
No, well, it depends. If it's got, like, a little punky haircut and what looks like a sad moustache, then that's a Westie.
How do you keep an eye out for that?
Yeah, keep an eye out for it. Well, or keep an eye out on Periscope next week when I bring her into the studio, just because it's something to do.
Sounds promising. Is Lady Condonk around? Because I've got something to ask her.
She's not, but I'm sure she might be listening. Why don't you ask her now, and we can see if she responds in the affirmative or the negative.
Lady Condonk, if you can hear this, can you answer me one question?
Will you touch me, Willy?
No.
Oh.
Do you think James Whale will be evicted in Big Brother?
Oh, James Whale. Now, he's... yes, he will be evicted in Big Brother.
Because it's him and Grant who's up for eviction, isn't it?
Well, both of them are perceived as a-holes by the public. I reckon it will probably be... I reckon, actually, Bovey will be the first to go.
So Whale will survive by the skin of his teeth?
By the skin of his chinny-chin-chin, as he often seems to do in his life that verges on disaster from time to time, bless him.
Maybe before we went in, he should have got some tips off George Galloway.
Maybe he should have done, maybe he did. Maybe he'll pop in here one day and get some off him.
About being a cat?
About being a cat. If you had to be an animal, Alan, to ensure that you could have intercourse with an actual woman, what animal would you pretend to be?
A Westie.
Thanks very much indeed. That's my dog, Alan, and that is actually distasteful. That's left a very bad taste in my mouth. 0844 499 1000. It's gonna be one of them shows, guys.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
I'm reminded, I've got to give away these pair of tickets to the perfume exhibition. Not perfume as in the scent, but as in the Japanese group. And I love perfume, genuinely. I played some SM. Some of you hated it and some of you adored it. But I've got a pair of tickets to give away. To go and see for free. It's free tickets. It's given away. To go and when is it? Saturday and Sunday. This Saturday and Sunday at the Old Truman Brewery Shop in East London. So it's London centric. It's London centric. But perfume with this brilliant girl group from Japan, Nihongo wa. They're awesome, and they're J-pop, and they're superb. And I got a pair of tickets. If you want them, just phone up and say you want them. I mean, that's a fair enough competition. Because we was at the BBC for years, we weren't allowed to do competitions. I remember once we had a text vote. Even though I said, we're not going to act on this, but just text yes or no, would you like to hear Gary Glitter's Christmas song? Because we're talking about Gary Glitter, so we often do from time to time. And my boss phoned up, no, can't do text votes. He said, no, we're not going to play it. We just want to, you know, see the lay of the land. So I don't really know how you do competitions, so I'm going to assume that this is a good competition, right? Perfume, there is an exhibition of, like, all of their clothes and stuff. I know, I'm going the night before on the press night, yeah. Yeah, could be there with lots of other famous people. Bill Wyman, I don't know. And it's in East London this Saturday and Sunday. If you want the tickets, you just got to phone up 08444991000 and you can have them. That sounds like a fair competition, doesn't it, Penny?
That sounds all right, yeah.
So I've got some tickets. If you want them, you phone up, you say, I want the tickets, we get your details. I put you in touch with a bloke called Daniel who's got the tickets. You go, you have a great time, everybody's happy, and that's the and that's how a competition should work, I think.
That sounds legit. You've given the criteria, it's all fine and dandy.
It's all fine and dandy and above board, and that's got to be good news for the casual listener. What you got for us, Penny?
I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. I heard you talk about running last night, and I've completely fallen off the running bandwagon now.
Off the, what do they call the treadmill? You've fallen off the treadmill.
I've fallen off the treadmill, yeah, almost literally it feels like.
I got to the end of week two of one of those Couch to 5K apps that you banged on about, and I haven't done it for 3 weeks.
I've not been out for about 3 weeks either, and I feel rotten, to be honest with you.
Do I have to go back to the beginning again, or can I pick it up? Will I be able to pick it up from where I left off?
You should be all right picking it up where you left off, I reckon.
It was quite early on.
Yeah, if you're only, what, end of week two? Yeah, you'll be fine picking that up. I don't know how I pick it up, but,
I probably won't pick it up, but it's good to know that I could if I needed to.
It's really hard, though, because I've had this, because I have to say, about 3 weeks I haven't been out, and I need to go out because my head is absolutely messy at the moment.
Yeah.
But it's that restarting thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that whole finding whatever you need to get going again, and I can't find that. And I think it's like the whole stress of the school holidays as well, if that makes sense, and the fact there's no routine, and I don't like it without routine. It's doing my head in.
The school holidays messes. I mean, it's great, you know. I'm saying that the kids have been at like their school has had courses and classes and stuff. They've been at sports camp all week, where we drop them off at 10 and pick them up at 4. We don't say that. We picked them up today. They were absolutely filthy. I said, "What have you done?" They said, "Oh, nothing." I said, "Hang on a minute. Just stay there, Paul."
Hello.
Yeah, what, Paul? You've been on?
Well, we were. For a media company, once he takes it off and you get once a media company gets off the ground, I will produce magazines, a magazine program for Sky 2 called for Sky 2 called.
Was that Shane? Was that Shane in the background?
I would like to.
He's not listening. Paul, are you listening to me?
Yeah.
Right. Was that Shane in the background?
Oh, I'm talking about the.
Oh God, he's not listening. Is Shane a real person?
Yeah.
Can you prove that?
Yeah.
How?
It's my friend.
Okay, no, fair play. Fair play. I'll buy that. That's proof enough for me. Thank you, Paul. Yes, Penny.
Where were we? We're talking about heads being screwed and stuff, weren't we? Oh, and I have a bone to pick. You were going to come to St Albans. What's happened?
Oh, I got it wrong. It's Luton.
Oh.
I got it completely wrong. It's Luton. But Luton's near St Albans.
Yeah, but that involves having to take a train, doesn't it?
Well, are you going to hitchhike? So on the 13th,
I stood at the train station for an hour this morning trying to get a train.
Sunday, the 13th of November, I shall be at the Bear Club in Luton performing my one-man show, Ian Lee's Tribute to the Musicals.
Sounds good.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
And look,
there's a Facebook page and everything. Should I tweet the Facebook page?
What, for the promoter guy?
For the event. He's made a
tweet. For the event?
Yeah, I'm going to tweet it. Let me tweet it and see what happens. Let's see if it sells out if I do that. There we go.
But tickets aren't on sale till Friday, are they?
Oh, are they not?
Well, that's what I saw something saying this morning.
Yeah, that'll be right then.
I think tickets go on sale on Friday.
Yes.
9 o'clock Friday morning, I think.
Oh, right.
But I'm still in a sulk that you're not coming to St. Albans. I walked to the venue.
Well,
that's the annoying thing.
Well, you've seen the show already, so I won't worry about it.
I haven't.
Have you not? Hang on a minute.
No.
Hang on a minute. Paul?
Yeah?
I think maybe stop calling in for tonight.
This is the last one.
Oh, you bet.
Well, what's my media company with the online channel is upset for? The magazine channel, which my online channel will call, will produce a show for Sky 2. It will be called a magazine called Show, a funny visual fun show called The
Brilliant.
It will be hosted by Big and Bob.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Big and Bob.
Well, I wish you the best of luck with that, Paul. So, yes, it's Sunday, the whatever it was in November.
13th.
Thank you. I will be performing live in Luton.
Sounds good.
Selling my CDs.
You should still come to St. Albans at some point.
Well, you say that.
I've not seen the show as the self-appointed leader of your fan club.
Luton's it's about 10 miles away.
Yeah, it's not that far.
It's not far at all. Get the bus.
It's not a 15-minute walk.
Get the bus.
That sounds scary.
I'm sure there'll be loads of guys coming from the St. Albans branch of my fan club will be coming. They're probably hiring minibuses.
Yeah, that's what we'll do. We'll sort out a minibus.
A right old sharabang. That's what you can do.
We should. What you were saying earlier about books and e-books, is it just me or is there not the same comfort? Is that the right word to use? In reading an e-book versus paper. I just love a bit of old-fashioned book, hold it in your hand thing.
Yeah. I don't get this grey, thin plastic rectangle. Where's the intrigue? Where's the mystery? Where's
the
smell? I went into a second-hand bookshop the other day and I was having a crafty sniff of all the books. Beautiful.
Mm. I do that. I collect old Ladybird books, you know, the ones we all had as kids and stuff. And the smell of some of that sounds really weird, though, doesn't it?
I did once sniff a 50 Shades of Grey, and I wish I hadn't. I retched a bit, actually. That was unpleasant. So but all the other books, oh, beautiful.
See, I was, but thinking, I don't like to say this, but thinking of 50 Shades of Grey, as you don't, I was hearing the other night, you know, Kyle, who phones in, he does his own little radio thing, competition, all that. But he had someone there talking about a pop-up version of the Kama Sutra.
Oh, yeah.
And also a 3D version of the Kama Sutra.
Wowzers.
Which apparently was found in a certain part of a large bookshop somewhere, hidden away in a corner where certain people used to go and sit sometimes to spend a few hours of their day.
Well, people would go and read the Kama Sutra?
It sounds like it.
That's outrageous.
It sounds like it, from what I heard. A woman phoned into his thing, used to work in a bookshop, talking about that.
What was I going to say just then? So we were talking about Kama Sutra.
Old smelly books.
Oh, my mind's completely gone blank.
You said you've been in somewhere, I think, or something like that.
I forgot. I've lost... my train of thought, Penny, and
do you find that's what's happening at the moment? School holidays, everything out of kilter, train of thought. I've totally screwed up a bit of work tonight for a client because I just could not think straight.
Yeah. I'd forgotten loads of stuff. I've been commissioned to write this piece about this group for Record Collector. Mm. And the editor emailed me today and I was like, oh, God, I'm supposed to write something for you, aren't I? He said, yeah, please. He said, oh, blimey, right, I'll get on that. And I'm thinking, I'm not going to get on it because I haven't got a clue where to start with it. I should have had it done 2 weeks ago.
I've been putting something off for weeks and weeks and weeks and finally sat down to look at it tonight and read through all the brief and went, uh-oh, I can't do this and I need to do it. And
yeah.
Yeah. It's time's running out.
Life. See what I did was doing before we did the show, right? I was trying to distract myself. I fell down the rabbit hole a little bit on YouTube. And I was watching. There's loads of videos. Not loads. There are a handful of videos. On the way home last night, right? I listened to Six Music. And they played, and I recommend this to anyone, it's called I Hope We've Passed the Audition. Between 1 and 2, they played, sometimes they play really good, slightly old music documentaries. And they did a documentary about the making of Let It Be. Tris, well, a regular listener, would have loved it, right? Brilliant. Mm. Six Music, I Hope I Passed the Audition. And it was about the making of Let It Be, and there's loads of stuff in there I'd never heard before. It was absolutely superb. So I'm kind of on a little bit of a Beatles trip. And then my friend Watco said, have you seen the video of, and I'm going to play a little bit of the audio, right? Have you seen the video of Stevie Wonder telling the audience at a Stevie Wonder concert that John Lennon's died, right?
Whoa.
It's, let me play. It is the weird, he does it in a weird way. Hang on, it's the weirdest vibe. Hang on a minute. Here we go. I've listened to this. This is weird. This is weird.
Say something. I'd like your attention, please. This is very important. And I want you all to understand that...
He does it in a all really weird phrasing, Stevie Wonder.
...who likes to be the bearer of any bad news. But I think...
He's got bad news.
...that I would like to... For those of you that don't know this, because I couldn't... It's been really hard for me to do this show tonight. But I did it... In memory of...
Just say it. Say it.
People like this man.
Say it.
Like Dr. Martin Luther King and like someone that recently was shot.
It's a really weird vibe. Here it comes.
Mm-hmm. Shot tonight, 3 times. And I will tell you who. And I know that maybe you won't be able to sing this song with me, but the song is about people like him. That have lived and died for the principle of unity for all people. And I'm talking about Mr. John Lennon.
Isn't that chilling?
I'm very sorry to
Isn't that you chilling?
In, but when I found it out, it's still very hard for me to do this show, even now. But I know that he would want me to continue to express those same feelings as he has. In his life.
It wasn't shot.
Isn't that chilling?
That's weird. I've got like goosebumps.
Yeah.
But I think it's also his phrasing as he says things.
Yeah. He's got a weird turn of phrase, hasn't he?
He has, but I've heard every time I've heard him speak, he does that. But it's because you've then got the silences in there, yeah. And those silences. Kind of gave me the goosebumps.
I don't think I've ever heard Stevie Wonder speak before.
Have you not?
No, I don't think I have.
But any interview, you often seem to have that kind of phrasing.
But then, 0844 499 1000, by the way, Bill, we'll come to you next. But then I kind of fell down the rabbit hole. Then I found a handful of, there are a handful of performances of John Lennon singing Imagine Live, just a handful. And there's one where he's at some weird glitzy awards ceremony and he's wearing this horrible red leather jumpsuit. It's the weirdest thing.
Sounds lovely.
And then I fell down the rabbit hole of... There are loads of interviews with Mark Chapman, the guy that shot him. There's loads of interviews with him, like on Larry King and like Good Morning America and stuff. It's now we've got Mark Chapman. Mark, why did you shoot John Lennon? And he's big. I thought this is the weirdest thing. And here's the thing. I'd always thought, right, that the Mark Chapman was a nut. I'd always thought he was a nut. You know, a proper, you know, tinfoil hat wearing, foaming at the mouth, certified lunatic. He comes across as a very rational, slightly dim, but rational young man. It's the weirdest thing. Not what I was expecting at all.
But how long after the event was this, though?
The Larry King one was about 92, so about 12 years after. Then I watched a bit of another one, but then I got distracted by something else.
Hmm. Strange, that.
I know, exactly. Penny, I've got to move on because I'm late for an hour, but thank you for that. What does that teach us? Well, it teaches us that you can find anything you want on YouTube and other things, which we'll explore after this.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Such a joy not to have Twitter on during the show. Such a joy, such a freedom, such a feeling of a release. This is Ian Lee, this is Talk Radio, 0844 499 1000. Really surprised to see that there are so many interviews with Mark Chapman. When I was at university, Mark Chapman's cousin came over, I think for a semester, as part of like a student exchange thing. Some students, including my friend Sarah and a couple of others, went over to Memphis. I think, have I got that right? I'm asking you. I know Sarah might be listening. Went over to Memphis, and then some students from kind of Memphis came over here. And one of them was Mark Chapman's cousin, and his name was Casey. Casey Chapman. And he was quite proud of his cousin. He's like, yeah, we knew Mark, and he was like a nice guy, you know, and he's kind of, and he would make jokes about it. I don't know if he was proud of him. I may have exaggerated that slightly, but he would make jokes about it, and it was very strange. 0844 499 1000. Yes, Bill.
Hello, Ian.
Hey, Bill.
Good to speak to you.
Good to speak to you, sir. Sorry to keep you waiting so long. What
no
you got
problem,
for us,
Ian? You mentioned Mark Chapman there. I don't know if you remember that bizarre coincidence about 20 years ago, but there was going to be a play on in London about John Lennon's life. And ultimately, the best actor was vetoed by Yoko Ono because his name happened to be Mark Chapman. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, I did not want to play Lennon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
I did not know that. I did not know that. That's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I like a bit of Lennon. He's overrated.
Yeah. Right?
But I do. There's a, now, here's the funny thing, right? There's a John Lennon song title that we can't say on the radio anymore.
Okay.
Do you know which one it is?
I'm trying to rack my brains, Ian. Can you give me a clue?
I'll tell you what I'm going to do, right? And again, I was surprised because there are versions of it live, right?
Okay.
So I'm going to play it. Up until the word that we can't say.
Right.
Right. Hang on a minute. Let me.
Is it the ballad of John and Yoko? Is that the?
No, you can play that.
Oh, okay.
You can play that. No, this is a John Lennon solo song.
Yeah.
Let's play this version from the. Hang on a second. All right. Let me just skip forward a little bit to where he starts playing it. This is on the Dick Cavett Show. Here we go. So we can't even say the title of the song. Isn't language funny? Here we go.
Yes, exactly.
You know this one? Here we go. I'm going to censor it, right? Woman is the next of the world. Yeah? Yes, she is. I had to dump it because I had to. But isn't it funny? It's a John Lennon song, and he's playing it there live on American TV. You would have heard that on Periscope. It's a song. It's on. It was on for quite a while. It was on a lot of John Lennon greatest hits.
Exactly.
And it's a political statement about. It's a slightly ham-fisted political statement, as a lot of his were.
Sure.
About how we. God, that was a dangerous game. And there was only one winner, and the winner was swear words. it's a ham-fisted political statement about how we treat. You know, women are the lowest of the low.
Yeah.
But you can't say the title. No, funny. And he was playing that live on American TV there from 1972. It's a funny old world, isn't it?
Ian, can I say about a bizarre irony following on from that?
Please do, Bill, yes.
You mentioned about Gary Glitter, didn't you?
Yes.
I think you mentioned last week as well, saying you can separate Paul Gadd from...
No, I can't, but I've spoken to people who can. I do like Gary Glitter's music, and I interviewed some fans, and some of them said that they could separate Glitter and Gadd's crime, Glitter's music and Gadd's crimes. I can't, but...
I certainly can. But what was bizarre, Ian, is that on the BBC chart show, on I think it was on Saturday afternoons, if Gary Glitter's risen in the chart, say, from 29 to number 2, they won't touch the song at all.
No.
Won't touch it.
No.
But they would play a song, Delilah, by Tom Jones, which I recently realised was about domestic violence, which ultimately ends up in a murder in a sort of jealous rage.
But I slammed the knife in and she laughed no more or something.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you know what the follow-up was to Delilah?
Oh, go on.
The Green, Green Grass of Home, about a man being hanged.
Oh.
Absolutely true, it was the follow-up.
Yeah, sure.
But that song is about... Oh, that was my leg, that wasn't... That song is about, you know, a murder.
Yeah.
But he didn't have sex with 8-year-old kids in Cambodia, did he? That's the difference.
Yeah.
Whereas Glitter did.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because it's a shame. It's more than a shame.
Quite innocuous, aren't they? They're sort of part of glam rock history.
Oh yeah, well the songs are innocuous, but it's the heinous crimes that he committed.
Yeah, sure,
and I do like Gary Glitter. I like listening to his music, and I love watching documentaries about him on YouTube.
Yeah,
because he's a fast. He's like an old pantomime dame. You watch him in the 70s, and the 80s. His big camp, these big eyes, his big camp thing. And I was going to make... I'm still toying with it. I am going to make a documentary about Gary Glitter fans because there's a great story in there. And I went round and met loads of these fans. And they were lovely blokes.
Yeah.
And they argued they could separate Glitter and his music from Gad and his crimes. And I can't because it is the same bloke.
Maybe it's just the memories of the time, Ian, because at the time, Gary Glitter was this sort of, you should say, over-the-top camp performer. And people remember that with affection, and perhaps they can't sort of separate that from Paul Gadd and what he did later in life.
Yeah. Well, I can't separate it because he wasn't doing it later in life. He was doing it.
Yeah.
He was. Here we go. Here's part of the problem: is he was using his success as a pop singer to groom children.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So the two are intrinsically linked, whether we want them to be or not.
But I mean, I'm not defending him in any way. But
they're good songs,
sort of uplifting, sort of cheerful.
Here we
songs.
Go. Well, you know, what's his name? Jonathan King.
Yeah, another one. Yeah.
Well, loads of his. So he wrote the English lyrics to Gloria, Gloria.
Yeah.
I think they've got your number, Gloria. That's written by Jonathan King, who's a paedophile.
Yeah.
And yet we still. I just sang it. And I can't mention the name of a John Lennon song. It's a crazy, it's a mixed up, muddled up, shook up world that's got my Lola.
Yes.
Bill, I've got to move on. Nice to talk to you, mate. Thank you very much. 0844 499 1000. Simon, stay there. You'll be next.
The radio show for people who know the best part of the day is the night.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
0844 499 1000 is the phone number. Periscope is up and running. There's about 422 people watching us at the moment, which is quite a lot of Periscope. If you want to join them, you can log in on your smartphones or your computer. Periscope.tv/IanLee, IAINLEE. And there are lots of them saying, well, can I call in about anything? Yeah, you call in about anything. You can call in literally about anything. And yes, if you want to call in about flying ants, flants, then you're more than welcome to do that as well. Simon.
Hip, 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 Mr. Lee.
Hip, 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 Mr. Simon, sir.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Good to hear.
On the way in, right, I've been listening to... because I've got DAB in the car now. And I like to... I've been experimenting with Six Music and BBC Four Extra, right? And on BBC Four Extra at 6 o'clock... I listened to it yesterday. Yesterday was part six. Today was part seven of the most boring, yet the most wonderful science fiction drama. I thought it was from the 60s, but they said today it's from the 80s, and it's called something like Discovering Earth. And it's basically, I don't know what it's about, but it's really badly acted. And there are lots of killer robots as well that talk like that because we are killer robots and we must sustain our own life force. It's the,
they're from Yorkshire.
Well, they might be. They're all speaking very, very posh. It turns out that in space, in the future, they're all going to be very, very posh English people who've obviously trained at RADA. It's the strangest thing, but it's really boring, but I really enjoyed it. Do you know, there's a thing, isn't there? There's a type of meditation. I can't think what it's called. Are you gargling water, Simon?
No, I've got my, earphones.
Oh, OK. There's a type of meditation where one watches quite dull, repetitive videos. They're all on YouTube. I can't remember what it's called. Someone will tell me what it's called. And you watch it and you enter this meditative state. And this radio programme, this awful drama from the 80s, what was it called? Interceptor... Two, discovering a Mission Earth. I know it had two at the end of it. Someone will know. 0844 499 1000. Anyway,
obviously made an impression, didn't
it? It made a real impression, Simon. What you got for us, boss?
Well, there's two. What did Stevie Wonder go into next? He did the John Lennon's Dead. What song did they play?
Oh, do you know what? That is. I bet it was. I don't know because I didn't get that far. I bet it was the one about. Is it called The Duke? That's about... Hang on. That's about old... it doesn't go in... It doesn't play the song.
Just a bit weird if it isn't She Lovely or Signed, Sealed, Delivered or something.
I think... Yeah, it doesn't play the song. I bet it was... Is it called... Sir Duke. That's it. Sir Duke. That's the one about old dead singers. So maybe he did that as a tribute.
OK. And the other thing was N-bombs and songs... And there's a bit of a hypocrisy in that Oliver's Army, by Elvis Costello, who I know you don't like, has an uncensored N-bomb in the middle of it.
Well, the N-bomb is in it, and it was only really discovered. I mean, that song came out, what, 1979 or something? It's a good song. I like that one.
Yeah.
And it was only, I remember a couple of years ago, there being a furore that Oliver's Army had the N-word in, and it was suddenly there were calls to ban it on Radio 1 and stuff. And I remember we played it, and it's in there. You kind of have to know where it's coming, but once you know it's there, it's there.
Yeah. There's a lot of people have hypocrisy.
Well, does it get played now? For example, if I were to pop downstairs to Virgin Radio and couldn't you play us a bit of Oliver's Army, could you? I wonder if they'd play it or if it's banned from their playlist because, you know, obviously language evolves over time. And I just wonder if that song would get played. I think it probably would. We played it at Three Counties.
Famous Sly and the Family Stone got Don't Call Me N-Bomb.
Oh.
Song which I'd imagine will never get played anywhere.
It's a shame because that John Lennon song's actually quite good. I mean, it's ham-fisted lyrics, but it's quite good. Woman is the of the world. Yeah, she is.
I'm not condoning that we should use an N-bomb more regularly than music.
Here we go. Here we go. No, here we go, right? As a white, and I need to preface this because it's important, a white middle-class, middle-aged bloke that kind of does all right, okay? I genuinely think, and I don't know how big a black audience we have listening to the show, but I genuinely think that we diffuse the power from words. We remove power from words by using them. You disagree?
I think contextually, that word in particular has overtones.
Yeah.
I think that word can still be used contextually to convey quite bad.
If I had a black gentleman in the studio and I called him the N-word, that would with malice.
Yeah.
Then if I called him,
is there a way to say my N-word in a friendly way? I don't know that there is.
Well, the black people do, and that's that is argued that is acceptable because they
cultural
are
cultural reappropriation, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's also I'm tripping over my thoughts here. If you say any word with malice, it's not pleasant. It's not a good thing to be doing.
But that's a particular word that I don't know. Being a white middle-aged man like yourself, I don't know if it's a good way of ever saying it or reclaiming it, because it's not your word to reclaim.
Well, I didn't say, no, hang on a minute. I didn't say I was going to reclaim it because it's not mine to reclaim. But it's, yeah, exactly. It's my language and it's, it seems, you know, that I can't use a word in my language because of the historical context. It's
what
six,
about the
it's six
guy,
letters.
The Dambusters dog?
Yeah.
Which they still show quite regularly as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Guy Gibson.
But it's just okay. Let me come at it this way because I'm going about it slightly the wrong way. It is incredible that six letters, two of which are repeated, can have so much weight. It can have so much. I'm really choosing my language carefully. It's odd that a six letter word can have so much perceived weight about it.
It ties to hundreds of years of oppression.
Yeah.
I think there's more goes on with that word, more subtext than I think even you and I are aware of.
Yeah, but it still boils down to essentially six letters.
Yeah.
That's all it is. All it is a noise made at the back of the throat that comes out of the mouth. That's it. That's it. And it can cause so much hatred and so much upset.
There's words around the any sort of minority or ethnic group, and so the gay community that have words that have a similar venom.
But I could say those. I can say poof, queer, and bender. Now they're not particularly pleasant words, but I can sit here and I can say them. Faggot. I mean, I can still say it. That's perhaps the strongest of the lot. And they're thoroughly unpleasant words, but I can't say the N-word. And I just think that's interesting that we have this sort... And I get it. I get the history of the word. I totally get it. You know, I'm not in any way denying, you know, what it's associated with and everything that, it, you know, that it's used as a... It's been used as a form of oppression from, you know, from white people over people, black people. I get it. But it's... I just think it's... Funny's the wrong word, but I'm going to say it. It's just funny that six letters could lose me my job if I said it now.
It's the evolution of language, isn't it? And the evolution of culture is
what's
still coming and out of popular use.
Yeah.
And the meaning and the use will change over time.
Well, exactly. 40 years ago, John Lennon singing it on live TV. Now that song is kind of hushed up and brushed under the carpet. And if it was
still Elvis Costello gets away with
still,
it.
Still, and that Simon there, Simon is the rub. Elvis Costello gets away with it. Thank you for that. 0844 499 1000. Imran and Billy, stay there. Tris is up next. Yes, Tris.
Hip hip hip
hip hip hip. Tris,
how you doing, fella? How you feeling?
BBC iPlayer. I hope we've passed the audition.
Yeah, I'm gonna check that out.
You're gonna love it. You're gonna love it. There was loads of stuff in there I'd never heard before.
Yeah, I'm gonna have a little listen to that in the car tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a treat. It's an hour long, and it's a real treat. It's a recording of Let It Be, and I'd forgotten all the nuts plans they had for the live concert. Because Ringo wanted to do it at the Cavern, which would have been brilliant, and the others went no. Then they were going to do it on Desert Island.
And one of them going to do on a cruise liner?
Yeah. Like they were going to get a cruise. They were going to take a cruise and 100 fans, and they were going to take them to Turkey. So they'd make they'd write all the songs on the cruise. Then they get to Turkey to like this really ancient amphitheatre and do the gig there. And they were yay close to doing it. And then George went, "Nah, I don't fancy it." And that's what scuppered it.
I think George is right with that, though, don't you?
Oh, what a movie that would have been!
Oh, that'd have been great.
What a movie that would have been, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. You know, I think you played one of the only decent, and I'm going to say it, one of the only decent Lennon solo tracks.
No, come on now. Be fair. Old Dirt Road. Hello, people on the old dirt road. Oh, that's a beautiful song, man.
Give me some truth, all right?
Give me some truth. God?
Yeah.
I don't believe in Beatles. I don't believe in Zimmerman.
But he is the most overrated solo Beatle going, I think.
He did some good songs. I love all the Yoko songs. In the middle of the bath, in the middle of a bath, I call your name. Oh, Yoko. I love that stuff.
Not
I love
me.
The fact. No, his a lot of his solo songs are love letters to his wife. How romantic is that, Tris?
Yeah, but yeah, it gets a bit tiring, doesn't it?
No, there's only half a dozen of them. They're beautiful. Watching the Wheels, beautiful song.
I think, but the thing is, what people forget is, come 75, he was dead in the water, wasn't he? He couldn't get a record contract to save his life. Griffin Records that picked him up.
Yeah, and that last album's a bit ropey, but Watching the Wheels, beautiful boy, great. Starting Over, great songs. Woman, Jealous Guy. Come on, Tris, what are you talking about?
Oh, Paul's the obvious winner.
Well, but Paul's been, like, Paul's got 40 years on Lennon, though.
Oh, yeah, I suppose so.
He's been around for a lot longer.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's, yeah. Oh, you know, I got, me and the wife took four children to the cinema today.
Were they yours?
To see. Three of them were, yeah.
Okay, fine.
See Secret Life of Pets. £10.45 I spent on a ticket.
Yeah.
I saw the trailers and the toddler went off on one, and that's all I saw. £10.45.
Flipping it, really? Because the toddler went nuts. You had to get out.
Yeah,
it's a shame, mate. It's a good film. It's one of the better ones that's come out recently.
Well, I'm going to watch the trailers before the BFG next week as well.
The BFG. Tris, I've got to go. Thank you, mate. I'm sorry, it was a brief one. Check out that documentary. You'll love it. The BFG does not interest me in the slightest. It looks Allah. But Secret Life of Pets is a really good one, as is Finding Dory, which I think, does that come out this week? I'm not sure. Anyway, that's a good film. 0844 499 1000. Imran, you'll be up next. Then it'll be Billy, and it could be you, dear listener. Now is an excellent time to call. I'm Ian Lee. This is Talk Radio.
Talk Radio.
Right, 1 hour down, two more to go. Imran, Billy, and it could be you, dear listener. Now is an excellent time to call. We call you back. 0844 499 1000. 0844 499 1000. You can call in about anything. It's been quite a roller coaster of conversation. It's 11 o'clock. I'm Ian Lee. This is the news on Talk Radio.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
There's a voice that keeps on calling me. Down the road, it's where I'll always be. Every stop I make a new friend. Can't stay for long, just turn around and I'm gone again. Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow I'll just keep moving on. Down this road that never seems to end. When your adventure lies just around the bend. So if you wanna join me for a while, just grab your hat, come travel light, that's hobo style. Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow the whole world is my home. So if you wanna join me for a while, just grab your hat, come travel light, that's hobo style. Just keep moving on. Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow I'll just keep moving on. There's a world waiting to unfold, a brand new tale no one has ever told. We've journeyed far, but you know it won't be long. We're almost there and we've paid our fare with a hobo song. Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow I'll just keep moving on. So if you wanna join me for a while, just grab your hat,
total sky. Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna go home. Until tomorrow, you know I'm free to roam. Ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. 0844, the buzz. stops. 0844 499 1000. You can call in about anything. But Periscope, we're trending on Periscope, which is really, really, you know, left me nonplussed. But for those people that are watching anywhere around the world, you can call in. We call you back about literally anything. What have we talked about in the last hour? Mark Chapman, the N-word. I can't remember what else. Loads of stuff. 0844 499 1000. Imran's on the line. Evening, Imran.
Hip, hip, hip.
Hip, 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 mate. What you got for us?
Ed, do you know, I'll be honest, I haven't been listening for too long, to be honest, but I love the show.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if you've sort of covered this before, but I just wanted to put it out to people and just wanted to get your views on whether you think, you know, the Earth is actually a globe or whether we live on a flat plane. Any views on that?
Say that again, Imran, because I thought I heard something that... Say that again.
Do you think the Earth is round, or do you think the Earth is flat?
I think the Earth is round.
Okay. Why do you think it's round? Just because of what you've seen and what you've been told?
No. Because what I've seen, yes.
Okay, so basically you've just seen images that NASA have...
No. That wasn't what I said.
Okay, so what else have you seen that makes you think the Earth is round?
I've seen evidence that the Earth is round.
But are you sure you have?
Yeah. Actual.
Okay, so I'm just like sort of chewing the cutting. So what evidence have you seen that makes you think the Earth is round?
Right. I have sat on a beach.
Yeah.
Right. And looked out to sea.
Yeah.
And you can't see anything else out there. You can just see the horizon. It goes on forever. Right?
Okay.
And I have seen a boat.
Yeah.
Coming from the distance.
Yeah.
Towards me. Now, that boat.
Yeah.
Doesn't start off as a tiny, tiny, fully formed boat where you can see all of it, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Okay.
What it starts off with is the tip of the funnel of the boat.
Okay.
And as it gets closer, you see a bit more of the funnel. Then you see the two funnels either side that are a bit smaller. And then you can see the... And as it comes towards you and comes over the curve of the Earth, you see more of it. If the Earth was flat, you would just see a tiny boat where you could see all of it getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Okay, so let me ask you. Okay, no, I understand what you're saying. So let me ask you this then, yeah? If you had a high enough powered telescope, yeah, and you looked at the same boat, yeah?
Yes.
You would have seen that boat a lot further out. The fact that you think you're just seeing...
No,
that,
you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't, because you wouldn't be able to, because the curvature of the Earth would prevent it. You'd see it in more detail. You'd see it bigger... But you wouldn't see it further out, no.
It's just due to the fact. Don't you think it's due to the fact that just, you know, the you're trying to look out to sea, yeah?
Yeah.
And you think you're seeing this boat just coming over around the curve of
the
Earth?
No. I've seen. You can see it, Imran. It's a testable thing that we can all see. I've seen it.
Okay, all right. So
that's my evidence. Now, do you think the Earth is flat?
I mean, I'm getting to thinking that it is, yeah.
I bet you are. I've given you the evidence that the Earth is round. What's your evidence that the Earth is flat?
Water. Now, I can't honestly believe, that we could have the mass of water on this Earth, and it just sticks to the Earth just due to gravity.
Well, it doesn't stick to the Earth.
Well, so what's holding the water down when the Earth is like so on the south?
But the water goes up. The water goes up in the sky.
We're talking about the water in the sea.
Yes. The water goes up in the sky.
How do you mean it goes up in the sky?
Where do you think rain comes from? It's no, new, do you think the rain is new water?
No, not at all.
Do you think that rain is new water?
That's obviously just the water that's evaporating up, yeah? So, no, yeah. I understand that.
So the water goes up. It evaporates up.
Okay, so that's the water. Okay, just on that then, yeah?
Yes.
Why doesn't gravity pull that water? Why does gravity allow it to go up?
Because it becomes lighter. Because it evaporates.
It doesn't matter.
It's not the same amount of water. It's not the same amount of water going up that you can see. It evaporates.
But the whole point of gravity, yeah, it doesn't matter what the mass of something is.
Yes, it does.
It defeats the whole object.
Well, but some things float, and some things don't float. It doesn't. You about to say defeats the whole object of gravity?
I'm just trying to think about this. Yeah.
I know, and I'm enjoying it. Yeah. It's good. It's a good little bit of mental exercise.
Yeah, no, but if you think about it, yeah?
Yeah.
Why a balloon rises, yeah?
Yeah.
Because of the... I mean, if you fill a balloon with helium, it will rise, yeah?
Yeah.
The helium in the balloon is lighter than air, yeah? So that's what makes it rise.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So why doesn't gravity pull that balloon down?
Because it's lighter than air.
But it doesn't make any difference, does it? So,
yes,
so,
well, obviously it does.
So the reason an apple falls is just because the apple is heavier than air.
Yeah. Yeah. The balloon is lighter than air, so it goes up.
Yeah.
And the apple is heavier than air.
But then what I'm trying to say to you is why doesn't gravity... Yeah, gravity affects everything, yeah?
Yes.
It doesn't matter about the weight of anything. We're not talking about density here. We're talking about gravity, yeah?
Right, yeah.
Why doesn't gravity pull that balloon down?
Because it's light... Because it's lighter than air, so it's floating up. Imran, I have given you, right, a solid, provable piece of science that shows that the Earth is round.
Ian, do you know what? I just think...
And you've not given me one bit of evidence that the Earth is flat. So it's 1-0 to me at the moment.
Okay.
So what have you got? Come on, man. You've been thinking about this. What have you got to prove the Earth is flat?
Okay, so, do you know, Ian, I should have just sort of had some figures in front of me. So the Earth, I mean, I think for every 6 miles, yeah... You get a certain amount of drop, yeah? I can't remember if it's like a foot or 2 foot or whatever, yeah? So why is it then that sometimes you can see stuff that's like, you know, if you stand at a certain point, you can see like 120 miles either side of you.
When have you ever seen 120 miles?
Okay, well, all right, okay, let's just keep it simple, yeah?
Well, look, I think you are by default, Imran.
No, honestly, mate, just bear with me on this, yeah? So if you stand at Dover, yeah, you can see the coast of France, can't you? 22 miles away.
Okay, well,
If you stood on...
Yeah, but that's not 120 miles.
No, it's 20-odd miles. Okay. So, do you know what? Like I said, Ian, yeah, I haven't got the figures in front of me.
No, you haven't.
The curvature of the Earth, yeah, shouldn't allow you to see that.
Why? Well, why? You said, why? Why not? You can only see the tippy point of France. You see the top of the Eiffel Tower, is that correct?
You are, sorry?
Carry on.
Yeah, yeah. So my argument is,
yes,
is that we have just been, from the day you're born, yeah?
Well, then, hang on a minute, why can't you... Right, okay, right.
Yeah.
So then why can't you stand on the top of BT Tower, right, the tallest tower in England,
yeah,
with the world's most powerful telescope in the world, right? We got the Hubble telescope that can see into space, right?
Yeah.
Point that flat, so it's horizontal with the Earth, right? Why can't you see Disneyland? Or why can't you see... the Great Wall of China.
Has anyone tried that?
No, because they know the Earth is round, you muppet.
Ian, I'm just telling you to forget about what you've been told.
No, I'm not forgetting about what I've seen. I've seen the evidence myself.
Okay, so do you think when they design bridges, yeah, and when they design railways, and when they design these tunnels that go for miles and miles and miles through mountains, yeah?
Yes.
Do you think they allow for the curvature of the Earth?
No.
Why not?
Well, because they flatten the surface, and also the curvature of the Earth isn't that great, so you're not going to notice it. On a bridge. Yeah. You're not going to notice it on a bridge.
Cool. I'll tell you what, Ian, do me a favour. You know, when you, if you've got a bit of spare time, you just do you know, I haven't got the figures. I've come unprepared yet.
Yeah. OK, well, but I look forward to you coming back. You, I'm not going to, but I look forward to you coming back with the figures.
OK.
Thanks, Imran. I enjoyed that, mate.
OK, bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. 0844 499 1000.
Late night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Alan on Periscope has just said Imran's next topic will be how can you be sure the train is moving and it's not just the scenery? Oh dear. David and Alfie, stay there. I'm coming to you, but Billy's been waiting for an age. Good evening, Billy.
Ian, God, that is 20 minutes of my life I will not get back. Well, you certainly ain't trending now.
That, and I was just saying to the Periscopers, early doors in this show, me and Kath, who will be back next week, me and Kath, but thank you to Emma and Ed who are doing an excellent job, me and Kath were going to get some Flat Earthers on. There's a website for Flat Earthers, and I posted on there.
Spare me.
Well, I posted on there. We'd love to get someone to come on. And a couple of people got in touch. And then the guy that runs the website said, look, Ian, I quite like you, and I want you to know I run the website as a joke, and I think the two people that have got in touch with you, they might be pranksters, so just be careful. So we never got them on. But we didn't need to because Imran came on, and that, for me, is wonderful.
I mean, it's all about perception and how we perceive things, you know, what is air? Like, you know, it gets all a bit silly, you know? Sorry? It just complicates and confuses things. I mean, what I phoned up for, I wanted to touch on, do you know what you're saying about the N-word? I mean, I'd like just like a straight, not an explanation, but a yes or a no. It's like, are you happy to use that word, or would you be happy for your children to use that word? I mean, you know, the answer probably, I'm guessing, would probably be no, wouldn't it?
Well, I've said the N-word before.
Yeah. But, I mean, again, it's kind of like
I've said... the two most powerful words at the moment, and this is off the top of my head, you can correct me if I'm wrong, are the N-word and the C-word. I say the C-word quite a lot, and I've said the N-word before, and not in a... I would like to think I haven't said it in a nasty, demeaning way.
No. Again, it's just sort of like, I recently read Mike Tyson's book, and then I was reading, like, can I say the word? Because there's two types.
Oh, hang on a minute. No, the other M-word?
Yeah.
No, but, you can't even say the other M-word. Well, the street spelling that's spelt with an A at the end instead of an E-R.
Yeah, we'll say Gert and Gar. Like apparently Gar is kind of like an endearment, like, hey, you would address a friend. I mean, I've got a lot of black friends in, like, the UK, and it's a term they're not, like, they don't really like, and they don't really get it or understand it from the Americans. I mean, if you look into it, I really find it self-degrading. It's because the thing is, even in America, even though they use that word, and they might say it, and then they might sing it in rap, it's kind of like... It's good for the goose, but it ain't good for the gander.
Who are the geese in this? And who are the geese? Are you saying that black people are geese and the white people are ganders?
No, it's who you want it to be. I mean, it's just a term I'm using, you know what I mean?
It's me coming on tonight, right, and I was feeling absolutely lousy, and tonight has turned into a proper late-night phone-in radio show. Thank you. I pray to the God of Mike Mendoza. Thank you. Let me stress again, right? It's I'm a white, middle-aged, middle-class bloke that's got a few quid in the bank, OK? I'm doing all right. So, for me, I can understand why some people would feel uncomfortable about me discussing whether it's right or wrong to use the N-word, right? Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is... I find it...
It's
only white people that are discussing it. This show tonight.
Yeah, but you get, like, you know, if you don't talk about things or break things down...
Yeah.
Then they become sort of
exactly.
And it's a kind of like, you know, becomes like this sort of poison chalice that no one can sort of like, again, like you said, it's just the word. It could be harmless. I mean, the word actually derives from Nigeria.
Yeah.
And it actually stands for king.
I guess what I'm trying to say is Billy, that isn't it amazing that six letters that a sound made in the back of our throat that comes, is amplified by our mouth, can have so much power and cause so much pain? It's just words, letters.
It's the same thing. I mean, you said like the C and the N word. I mean, but the biggest thing now in the world today, which I don't want to go into too much, which really gets sort of what people are thinking and really creates backlashes, is like, you know, if you kind of like, you know, insult Islam, that's like a really big, massive sort of thing. Or if you kind of like, if you kind of like frown upon any certain beliefs or any of their scriptures, it's kind of like, it's not like you're not allowed to question nothing, because that's what it is and that's what you've got to pay attention to. And,
I agree with that. It's you're not allowed to kind of kick ideas. Well, no, hang on, let me phrase that. In some quarters, if one kicks around ideas, and not saying that that's what they believe, they're just kicking the idea around, you can be rounded upon. Twitter is a terrible place to kick around an idea to try and reach a conclusion, because people will take you at face value. They'll only read your third tweet and they will pound on you. I know, because it's happened to me. I like to think that this show is a place that's a little bit safer to kick around ideas.
Yeah, we can explain and maybe like you know, try and like, it's all about, again, like perception and making sense of things. I mean, like, you get atheist type people and they spend their life, they're almost like a religion where they sort of like, everything has to be fact and proven and it's what makes sense to them.
Yeah.
But like, you know, religion is what makes sense to you. And it's kind of like, they're just on the other side of the fence. I mean, I'll put myself down as a separatist. I mean, I'm not intelligent, I'm not working class or anything like that, but I'm very black and white, I'm very simple, I'm very like, you know, good, bad, right, wrong, and try and make sense of it and think, oh, well, hold on, that doesn't seem right to me, you know, that don't feel like, you know, I'm doing a good or right thing. And it's almost like, you know, people going about sort of Jesus. Now, obviously, he existed. I mean, some people don't even understand that, and it's embarrassing, but it's almost like he did exist, but then whether he was a son of God is another thing. I mean, for example, could you imagine if he went on sort of like, you know, for American viewers, Jerry Springer or Jeremy Kyle, and sort of like, you know, he had the president sort of, say like, Joseph the Carpenter, say from like Dagenham, and like he said, yeah, like, you know, she's pregnant, she's still a virgin, yeah, and had sex. I mean, he'd probably be laughed out of the thing. Like, everyone would probably be like, well, where did he get his drugs from? You know what I mean? He's kind of like, you know, I don't mean to sort of like offend anyone in saying that, but it's what makes sense to me. Do you know what I mean? And it's, you know, whether he's God's son or whatever, he was a decent, good person. And it's kind of like, you know, I respect people that have their beliefs. I respect that you believe that. And I wouldn't want to sort of like rubbish it off. But that's just my, like, I'm not outruling nothing. But
I think we should be allowed to question all kinds of religions, whether it be Christianity, whether it be Islam, whether it be Judaism. We should be allowed to question them and point out the inaccuracies. And I think we are allowed to do that, aren't we?
Yeah, to a certain degree. But then, like I say, like Islamic states, like they have this Sharia law.
Yeah.
I've been following this guy, and it's kind of like in the Quran. I've heard stuff, so I try and do research to find out, so rather than accept rumours. And it was saying about, like, you know, you're allowed to lie an oath to protect your religion. So someone could condemn something, and really they're not, you know. And it's kind of like, there's a lot of, like, contradictions.
Well, but there's contradiction in all religious texts.
Yeah, people say that, and a lot of, like, sort of lefty side, my favourite middle class, it's how with the Bible, but it's not exercised no more.
Well, no, now here you go, right? You've just criticised Islam because of a contradiction that you claim to have found, right? But then you've just said that the people that pick out the contradictions in the Bible are lefty type middle class people. Well, that's not fair. That's not fair, Billy, to throw that accusation around. That you're allowed to question Islam, but hang on, you're now saying that we're not allowed to question Christianity.
No, you can question Christianity.
But you would label that person a lefty middle-class person.
Yeah. But the thing is, in sort of like Christianity, you don't get stoned and sort of killed. It's kind of like...
Well, but hang on, Billy. I've allowed you to question Islam and you're not being stoned, are you? Have you been stoned? Have you been killed?
Yeah, no, but I'm not under Sharia law, am I?
Well, No, you're not. But you're, I'm getting very confused.
If you looked at Sharia law, and if you looked at,
well, it's pronounced Sharia,
involved
but,
in it. Yeah, Sharia, whatever. I mean, like, you know.
But Billy. Hang on a minute. Calm down, dude. Where's this? This is another attitude thing, right? You've just come on, right? And you've contradicted yourself. I'm going to pick you up on that, right?
Okay. You look good to followers now, yeah.
Say that again.
Yeah, make sure you look good to followers. Okay, granted. But, I mean, I'm impartial, Ian.
But Billy.
I'm not Christian or I'm not Islamic.
You're doing exactly what you've just said that you were against. I'm questioning you. We're kicking ideas around. We've just established this is a safe place.
Yeah, it's a debate, yeah.
We've just established we're kicking around ideas, and you've started having a pop. Isn't that interesting?
No,
you've just started, you've just made it personal about me.
I said one's worse.
By saying that Billy, calm down, dude. We're in no rush. We've got the rest. Yeah. We've got until midnight if we need it, right?
I've got to go shortly because I've got to start working. But it's kind of like...
No, but I've said like, something, and you've had a little... You've just said something under your breath about me. So you're doing what you're criticising other people are doing. Admittedly, it's not the same as...
Sort of, like, calls and create sort of, like...
No,
you know, issues and that for people to phone in and make it conclusive.
No, not at all. You've called in about this spontaneously. We're discussing it, and then under your breath, you just had a little pop at me. Now,
I'm sorry.
Well, but now you're being sarcastic. So...
The very thing
you have called in to criticise, you're doing.
I called in originally about the N-word, and it got onto that, and I don't know, we're stuck in it, but it's kind of like, again, I mean, it's something I'm sort of like, I explore and sort of look into other
people. But then when someone questions you, you have to come back on the attack. So it's all right for you to explore, but if I try and explore, you come in on the attack.
What did I attack you on? We're talking about it. What did I attack you on? Because you like sort of remind me.
Well, I don't. If I need to remind you, mate, there were two things. If I need to remind you, first of all, you said that if anyone points out the hypocrisies in Christianity, they are do-gooder lefty liberals, which is utter nonsense. And then when I picked you up on something else you'd said, you muttered under your breath about, oh, it's good for my listeners or something.
Well, it's the way you were turning it over to me, and it was kind of like...
I was questioning... I'm questioning you.
But you were attacking me. I wasn't attacking you at all.
What an absolute stupid thing to say. I wasn't attacking you. I've mentioned Christianity, and you've gone, you can't... The only lefty do-gooders pick out the hypocrisies in Christianity after you picked out the hypocrisies in Islam. Then I picked you up on something else, and then you muttered an insult under your breath.
But do you not weigh things up, Ian, and look at sort of like what... But you don't, Billy.
You think you do, but you don't. You're just as closed-minded as the people you've phoned up to criticise, but in a different way.
And so what are you? You're completely perfect, and it just makes you look good. And there we go again. Yeah, I know, because you took it personally, Ian.
No, I took the insult to me personally, yeah. But I know I'm not perfect at all. Of course not. I'm just a bloke.
I'm not perfect.
Billy.
If you pull me up, yeah, I know you say that with light, but it's kind of like if you pull me up on it, I'll address it. And it's kind of like...
But I've pulled you up on something, and you've not addressed anything. I've pulled you up on 2 points, and you've not addressed them. You've just come in with a pop.
Yeah, but I asked you to explain them, and you just said this thing and that thing, but without explaining
they were the explanations, but you were choosing not to listen.
Yeah, but you said this and that. You didn't say what.
Okay, there are lots of hypocrisies in the Bible.
Yeah. I'm aware of that.
But apparently, only lefty liberals.
That is out of order. But I mean, again, it's kind of.
But that's what you said. So I can only go by what you said. And you said only lefty liberals do that. Bring that argument up.
I'm just sort of mean, like kind of. I'm liberal myself, Ian. But sometimes people get like a bit wishy washy and kind of like.
sort of like, you know, it's a good way to be, to see the best in things. I'm fully sort of like adverse with that. But
I don't think you choose to see the best in things.
I do, mate. I do, and that's what I pride myself on, Ian. And it's kind of like.
But then you've just. But then why have you just phoned up? And why? I don't understand why you're having a pop at Islam then.
I'm not having a pop at Islam.
But you were. You were saying that you're not allowed to criticise Islam because under Sharia law, people would get stoned.
No, it's not criticised. If you question.
How does that impact?
How does that impact?
It's
very strict.
Okay. And so is the Bible, mate. The Bible is full of horror and war and nonsense.
Yeah, but does it run our sort of our police system, or does it run our sort of political system?
Yes, it does. We're getting there. There's a little chink of light. Yes, it does.
Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, I was saying that the other thing is extreme, but like, I'll just leave it at that because it's not a lot, obviously, like a great subject, is it? But I mean, again, it's like I do look for the best in people, but then I've seen sort of certain things that like, you know, I'm trying to explore something. It almost feels like, you know, I had a bit of a finding, like something come to me, and I thought, I'm really intrigued to sort of like look into this sort of book and explore this culture. And I think is that for like, you know, it wasn't for the wrong reasons, Ian. It was to kind of like, you know, there's a lot of you know, people's you know, Islamics in our country. And, like, the thing is...
Muslims. We call them Muslims.
Muslims, yeah, but, I mean, I don't know what's sort of correct thing to say. I mean it with bad intent, Ian. Again, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I've never fallen out of a... that I'm Muslim. I've never had a bad word or, like, you know...
I don't understand why you keep going on about Muslims.
Because that's what you were going on about.
No, I wasn't going on about it! You were going on about it!
You said I was criticising it. I said it's one of the things in the world today, which is, like, you know, highly, which you can't really...
No, but you can't... You've just spent 20 minutes criticising it. You can't criticise it. This is the myth, right? This is the myth. And I did this. I had this. Billy, hang on. Billy.
Under an Islamic state.
But then freedom of speech doesn't exist anywhere, mate. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, but I can talk about it on a radio.
No, you can't. Freedom of speech does not exist on this radio station. Fact. I had to censor a John...
Billy, let me finish...
No, but Billy, listen. I had to censor a John Lennon song tonight. I had to dump it. Freedom of speech does not exist. It's a myth.
Let's get onto a lighter tone
now. No, we've run out of time, Billy, but I enjoyed that. Call in again. 0844 499 1000.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
0844 499 1000. Suddenly, in the last 35 minutes, this has become a proper late-night phone-in radio show. I enjoyed all that. And I love the conversation about free speech. Free speech doesn't exist, guys. It's a myth. Certainly a myth in terms of the radio. People will phone up throughout my career here, as they have done at other places, and say, you're censoring me, where's my free speech? You haven't got free speech on the radio. They're the laws of libel. You can't phone up and libel someone, and you can't swear. I had to dump a John Lennon song, Woman is the N-word of the world. If I can't play a John Lennon song, think of all the other things you can't do. Freedom of speech is a myth. I enjoyed that. I do enjoy that. It's a little bit of late-night mental sport. So I hope Billy calls in again, because I did enjoy that. 0844 499 1000. David's on the line. Evening, David.
Hi. Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you, David. I'm feeling alive, which is good.
Alive? I've been laughing, fella. I found you about a month ago, I guess. I rediscovered talk radio. Not what I called in about, but you've got a special little place in my heart. Not yourself, Mike Dickin, Talk Radio, about 1999.
You love Mike Dickin. You love Mike Dickin. He was brilliant, wasn't he, Mike?
He was a superb man. He was a Formula One fanatic.
Mm.
And I had a little chat with him on a couple of occasions.
You live in High Wycombe, which has got a very special place in my heart.
You, fair enough.
My sister got married in High Wycombe.
Oh, I see.
I know High Wycombe very, very well. Partly because I've had to visit people in the hospital quite a bit. But I know High Wycombe very, very well.
Oh, well, I've only been here about 18 months, but I only moved over from Aylesbury, so I haven't come far away.
Exactly. It's all. I used to live in Farnham Common.
Well, I know all of these places very, very well.
Yeah.
Just so you know, Ian, I'm watching you on Periscope as well. It adds an awful lot to it to see your reactions to callers as well as comparing them to my own. And I have to say, after Imran, I was laughing.
He was good,
but
wasn't he?
He's got a point.
Oh, come on. Come on, David, you're better than that.
I'm an intelligent man. I turned 50 Friday. I'm not... Yes, I can see you.
Can I just say, hang on, the person... I knew someone would correct me on Periscope, but Ian, libel is written. You mean slander. No, I mean libel. If you say something on the radio, it counts as it being published. It is libel, not slander. Yeah. Boom, shakalak. There we go, guys.
Well,
anyway, yes, David.
I won't be saying anything naughty, but I will pull you up on a couple of little your
please do
your reasonings with Imran. Just a little thought.
I'm getting comfortable for this because I'm going to enjoy this. I'm going to enjoy pulling your pants down.
I take it this was as you sat on your beach looking out at the wonderful clear sea.
Yes.
This was a big boat that came over the horizon.
Yeah. It was one of those giant cruise ships.
Yeah. So is it possible that if there was so much curvature as you looked out,
yeah,
would you not see it side to side?
What do you mean side to side?
Well, if you look across the horizon, you're looking out to sea, you look from left to right, as far as you can see left and to right, would you also not see if it's that much of a curvature that it's going over the horizon as you look out to sea? The sums, by the way, the equations.
Hang on a minute. What does that mean? You see it side to side?
If you look out, you're looking at a flat horizon, aren't you? As you look out to sea, you're looking at a flat horizon.
Yeah.
Well, you should be able to see surely as far side to side as you can looking out.
No.
Why not?
Well, why would you think that you could?
Well, if you're
I don't get what sea, you see. It's the horizon. It's the sea, and it looks like it drops off the edge.
I can give you the figures for this as you go out. I believe. I mean, this is from what I've researched on it, and I'm open minded, Ian. You know,
when you say open minded, you don't for a second think the world is flat, do you?
I'm not convinced it's round.
Oh, for Christ!
I'm not. I'm really not. I've seen nothing with my eyeballs.
Have you never been in an aeroplane?
Yes, and I've travelled to New Zealand, America on several occasions.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but have you not looked out? Do you ever look out the window in the aeroplane?
Yeah, and
you can see the curvature of the Earth.
No, you can't.
Oh, yes, you can.
You're imagining it, Ian.
Of course, you can see the curvature of the Earth.
You cannot.
When you're up, of course you can.
The horizon, okay, if you think you can.
Yes.
When you look out of an aeroplane,
yeah,
the horizon is always at the same level, isn't it?
I don't know what that means.
Well, the horizon will stay level. When you look out, the horizon is always level. Now, if you went...
What do you mean it's always level?
If you go up,
the horizon moves. And if you go down, it gets closer.
I don't believe it does.
Wait a minute. So if you're on the ground in an aeroplane, right?
Yeah.
The horizon is closer to you. If you go up, the horizon is further away from you.
Yes, but you don't actually see... Like I say, I'm open-minded.
You're not open-minded. You're bonkers by the sound of it.
Okay, let's look at it from another angle. You know when you fly long haul?
God bless. You enjoying this, JP?
If you fly long haul and you fly, you know, if you look at the route you take, you think, well, you know, most often you look at it and it seems to be not a direct route. You know, I've flown to Malaysia via LA, and it was a real L shape on the map as you follow it. If you place these routes, these long haul flights over what they describe as the flat Earth map, all these. Yes.
It's also fair to note that the
United Nations emblem is the flat Earth map. I know.
So you're saying that the United Nations
You look up the United Nations emblem.
It's a map. I know what the flat Earth map is. It's like those kind of sort of shape. Those like, but it's like orange peel shapes, and it's got the Earth.
No,
on it.
No. It isn't. No, that is your unwrapped globe. That's if you
right,
take an.
Right. So you're saying the UN know that the Earth is flat.
Well, it'll look at the UN logo.
Right. What's at the end?
Another point to note.
Hang on a minute.
Another point to note.
No. Hang on a minute. Let's focus on this. What's at the end of the Earth?
Okay. On the flat Earth map, you've got the North Pole.
No. In your world, David.
Around the outside.
What's on the end of the Earth? If you kept sailing and sailing and sailing until you got to the edge, what would you find? Like turtles stood on each other's backs, or?
How about imagining Antarctica, which we never fly over?
Well, how about answering my question?
Well, I am. Because, you know, you're sort of about going out to sea into nothing. Well, how about if you imagine that... imagine that the North Pole is in the centre of the map.
What's at the edge of the Earth?
The Antarctica.
Right, so what's after Antarctica?
Ice, and who knows? But it's
ice forever. It's infinite ice.
Antarctica is a complete military zone, a no-go zone. And you can't cross it.
Right, OK. Thanks for calling, David.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Right, we've got a rattle through this. We've got a guest on at midnight, Sean Levy, who's written a brilliant book about Jerry Lewis. Alfie!
Got it, mate.
Hello, Alfie. What have you got for us?
Well, I wanted to kind of stick with the conspiracy talk that we've been getting into, because I feel like the last two callers have they've had some good points, but I didn't agree with what they were saying. So
okay. The last one didn't have any good points, but go on.
Yeah. Well, I was just wondering if you've got any like alternative 9/11 theories.
No.
Anything at all?
No. I think what happened was, a group of terrorists hijacked some aeroplanes and crashed them into some buildings.
And that's it.
And I know that makes me a sheeple, but I know your terminology. Yeah, I think some really clever terrorists got lucky and had trained up and they smashed into some buildings. Yeah, that's what I think.
I mean, it's a bit of a simple explanation. I can't even say the word.
Well, that's not so simple, is it? But why can't the simple explanation be the real explanation? Why has it got to be more complicated?
Oh, I just think that things aren't that simple.
But what if things are that simple?
Well, they can be, but yeah. I think for that event.
Go on then. Well, go on then. Go on then. Let's do it. Let's dive in head first. Let's do it.
You really want me to dive in right now?
What happened on 9/11?
Well, I think it's a combination of three things and three nations.
Okie dokie, here we go.
Okay, number one, the Bush administration and the individuals in it. People like, not George Bush himself, because he even ties on shoelaces. We're not going to talk about him. People like Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, Donald Rumsfeld all have a hand in the attack.
In what? In what? How?
Well, have you heard of the Project for New American Century?
How did Dick Cheney have a hand in 9/11?
Well, he was in the underground bunker in the White House during the whole day, and no one actually knows what he was up to.
Okay.
So, I mean,
how do you know that?
Because there's photos that were released by the White House just a few months ago of him in there.
When did he go in the bunker? Did he go in the bunker before the aeroplanes hit the buildings?
He was in there early in the morning.
Right. Before the aeroplanes hit the buildings?
Yes.
How do you know that?
Just because I've seen the photos.
Where did you get these photos from?
They was released from the White House's Twitter feed.
They're on the White House's Twitter feed, were they?
Yes.
So what do I need to Google to see these photos? Tell me what to Google.
You can just type in
I want to see the photos of Dick Cheney in the White House underground bunker before the planes, before it had been announced those planes had been hijacked. I want to see those pictures. What do I Google?
Just type in Dick Cheney 9/11 and you'll see photos of what he was doing. He's got his feet up. He looks very cozy. He's just sitting there watching everything. So, yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, because the first website is a website called 9/11 Research. I'm guessing they might be a little bit biased.
I'm reading the comments on your Periscope as well, and I'm getting a hell of a lot of abuse.
Oh, well, ignore those. Ignore them, Alfie. They're idiots on Periscope. Ignore them. There's nothing to do with me, and ignore them. And I'm trying to find a way around that because they do. Don't worry about that. But you've got to accept though, if you're going to put forward theories, you're going to get criticism.
Of course.
Okay, but these are all everything that's coming up. InfoWars. They're all coming up from slightly biased opportunities. Yeah. Anyway, let's assume that's right. So, what did he have to do with 9/11?
Well, I was talking about the Project for New American Century, and that was a think tank that came out in the '90s, and basically. In this document, they outlined about six or seven countries that they wanted to go to war with.
Yeah.
And in this document, it had the names of Afghanistan and Iraq. And
right. Tell me about the aeroplanes going into the building, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did Dick Cheney arrange that?
Well, I don't think it's him. This is just one individual we're talking about. There's other players involved.
Who arranged for the aeroplanes to go into the Twin Towers?
Personally, I believe it, like I said when I said earlier, that it was a combination of three agencies. I personally believe that it was the Saudi royals and the Mossad.
Right. So, hang on a minute. All right. So not the Americans.
No.
Weren't involved in it.
Well, not. I can't say the Americans. We're talking about like 600 million people, individuals who are American, Jew, Israeli. Yes. That's right. What I'm talking about.
So you're saying it was the Jews what did it?
No,
it was the Jews that did it.
I'm not saying the Jews.
Well,
no.
You've mentioned the Israelis twice, and Israelis tend to be Jewish.
Well, that depends. Some people would say differently and say that Zionism and Judaism are two completely different.
Zionism and Judaism are two different things that do overlap slightly. But you mentioned Israelis. Now, Israelis are Jewish. So it's a Jewish conspiracy. Did the buildings fall down or were they blown up?
Oh, absolutely, they were blown up.
Of course they were. Understand. Who blew them up?
Well, I can't.
Who do you think blew them up?
Mossad.
So the Jews blew up the Twin Towers, right? Now, this would have to take the whole thing, the plane hijacking, the blowing up the building, the planting the bombs, all of that stuff, right?
Mm.
A lot of people would have to be involved, wouldn't they? A lot of people. How many do you reckon? 500? 1,000? 2,000?
I'd say under 100.
Under 100 people?
Yeah.
Could make that happen?
Yep, absolutely.
Wowzers. Wow, it's a terrifying world we live in.
I was going to say one more thing. And you can research
I'm not. I'm not going to. I'm really not going to. Well, Alfie, may I make a suggestion to you?
Go on.
Get off the internet, man. Go out in the sunshine. Go and kiss a girl. Go and read a book. Go and ride a bike. Go and climb a tree. Go and swim. Go and steal apples from your next door neighbour's garden. Go outside. Get off the internet, man.
I read all the time.
Yeah, but you're reading nonsense online. Go and read a good novel. Go and read a book about the Beatles. Go and listen to the Beatles. Go and listen to Jimi Hendrix. Go outside. Go for a walk barefoot on the beach, Alfie. Close your laptop.
Okay, I will.
Excellent, thank you. Craig!
Yeah.
Good evening, Craig.
Good show.
It's been a proper nighttime, late-night phone-in show, hasn't it, tonight?
Excellent.
Yeah.
I was going back to the use of the N-word and how words change.
Yeah, sorry, someone's tweeted, has the unexplained on talk radio moved from Sunday nights to this evening? What's going on? I don't know what's going on. Anyway, go on, Craig, yes.
Yeah, it's called Euphemism Treadmill.
What? They were. I've got their second album somewhere.
It's how words change, words that are okay change to be insults over time.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, in America, it's the National Association, the Advancement of Coloured People, is the civil rights movement for black people. But we can't use the word coloured people anymore.
Well, no, and also, if in America, if you use the word black people, that's frowned upon. It's African-American, of course. And I have had, I've done interviews with Americans where I've said black people, and you can audibly hear them wince.
Yeah, and the National Congress of American Indians, because back when those were set up, those words were okay.
Yeah.
And we can't say American Indians anymore, even though I think Stephen Fry said that they sometimes accept it. So, yeah, words do change. You know, like Burke used to be part of a swear word.
It was Berkeley Hunt.
Yeah.
It's rhyming slang, isn't it?
But we can say Burke now. It's a polite one.
Was it Berkshire? Anyway, it doesn't matter. We can. Craig, I've got to move on because I want to squeeze in two more calls if I can before we get our guest after midnight. Lee!
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello, Lee.
How you going, mate? All right?
I'm all right, Lee. What you got for us? We haven't got long, I'm afraid.
Awesome. I've got a totally different topic. I just want to talk about the law and trading standards at the minute.
The film trading standards? No, that's trading
general,
places.
Just the people who are trading standards.
Yes.
But the police. Because at the minute, I've got an ongoing investigation that's been going on for 2 years.
Who's investigating it? The police?
No, the trading standards.
Okay, fine. We can talk about it then. Go on.
Because I was buying stuff from a website where anyone can go and order from, but they randomly turned up at my door one day saying I didn't have the copyright to sell that product.
Uh-oh.
So now it's gone on for 2 years, but what I want to talk about is what are you supposed to do in 2 years? So my court date's on the 29th of October.
All right, so it's going to court?
Well...
Well, because if it's going to court, we can't talk about it.
All right.
Sorry, put Rashid on, because we will... Sorry, if it's going to court... We can't talk about it. Rashid, you got a last-minute reprieve there.
Oh, Ian, if the world is black, hold on, we can't even sort out the world. We're talking about 9/11. Who done it? We can't agree on the world.
I know, we can't get that
basic. The Muslims, which I am one, we can't agree on the moon. We can't even start Ramadan at the same time. Right? We're all confused. Ian,
yes.
If the world was flat, would it be a rectangle shape? Because... What I see on the moon reflecting from the sun is a sphere, the Earth's sphere. Oh. I see the curve of the Earth on the moon. Boom!
Basically, Rashid, we're screwed, aren't we? Yes, and can I just say, by the way, right, everyone that's called in this hour, and we've had an argument and a tussle, Billy and Imran, all those, I hope they all took it in the spirit it was intended. I want those people to call in again. And I hope they enjoyed the locking of horns and the sport of a darn good argument and people disagreeing with them. And I've really enjoyed the last hour, Rashid, and I want those people to call in again. And other people listening that have strong opinions about things. You know, you will be challenged.
We can learn from each other. We can learn on a journey of learning.
Of course we can. We can learn. But we'll end it there, Rashid, on those wise words from you. We can learn on a journey of learning. And that is the title of the podcast. We can learn on a journey of learning. Don't call for a bit, because when we come back from the news, we're going to speak to Sean Levy, who's an author in the States. We'll speak to him for about half an hour or so. So the last half an hour, if you want to call in, you'll be more than welcome to. But why don't you just sit back and have a little rest and let me do the work for the next 30 minutes? Is that okay? Good.
Talk Radio.
This is Ian Lee. This is Talk Radio. For the next 30 minutes, sit back, don't call in, just relax. We're going to speak to Sean Levy, who's an author from the United States of A, who has written a book that I've just finished and is an absolute joy, The King of Comedy. It's about Jerry Lewis, and we will find out more after the news. It's midnight. It's Talk Radio.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk. Talk Radio.
I'm a
little busybody, though I know it's very shoddy. I insist on knowing what is going on with everybody, cause I'm such a busybody, always prying, always spying. I'm defying anyone to try to hide the facts from me. Now Mrs. Jones is with the doctor and her pulse is finally clocked, as suddenly she sees me peeking into all her friends. I'm shrieking, Mrs. Jones's valve is leaking, a mechanic she is seeking, cause her clutch needs overhauling and her motor's always stalling. Mrs. Jones, you lonesome gal, you finally lost your trade in value. Now we come to Mr. Clunky, thinks that I'm a little punk. He's always keeping up with Jones, and while I tap his telephone, I learn that they will disconnect him soon. The bill they don't collect, the sheriff's gonna take it back, his brand new shiny Cadillac. So now I pass the news around that Mr. Clunk is bankrupt bound. I'm ruining his credit, and I know he won't forget it, though he thought I was a little punk, that cabbage headed Mr. Clunk. I got the bank to fume and fret, they took his home, and better yet, they grabbed his television set, because I'm such a busybody. I'm a little busybody. If you drink an extra toddy, I will spot it long before you bought it. I'll be pointing to your house and telling folks that you're a souse, though I admit I am a louse. It's so much fun to tell the neighbors that you're underneath the weather, and they ought to get together using you as an example to their kids of what a tramp will do if he is off the wagon. Now your reputation's dragging, cause you took an extra toddy, and I'm telling everybody that you're more than slightly dizzy. Now I've got you in the tizzy, cause I'm such a very busy little busybody. I'm the death of every party. You should hear the things I say when truth and consequence we play. I state the age of Mrs. Dunn. I tell him she is 61 and that her face is lifted and her cargo slightly shifted. There are couples kissing in the dark. I use my flashlight for a lark, and Joan is hugging Mortimer and she's engaged to Mr. Shore. I'm hiding in the cuspidora, flash a light upon their face while they are locked in fond embrace, and Mr. Shore then wrecks the place. I'm such a busybody, breaking up a lovely party. Is on the scale and suddenly she's growing pale, for in a chorus so endearing I have got the neighbors cheering, darling what a lovely weight, you weigh 188, you lick the pattern off the plate and then you bleed for more to eat, you look just like a strange balloon that drifted to us from the moon, and scientists must watch their step and see if you're a secret weapon. That is how the gossip goes, and all because I stick my nose in other people's dirty clothes. A heavy-winded guy am I, don't need a breath to say goodbye, because I'm such a busy little busybody, busy booty bee.
Now,
I'm a little busybody.
I'd forgotten how much as a kid I used to love Jerry Lewis. Used to love Jerry Lewis. There was always a Jerry Lewis film on Saturday afternoons on BBC Two. And it might have been Martin and Lewis with Dean Martin, of course, or it might have been one of his solo films. But there was always on. And as a child, I loved him. And then I kind of forgot about him. And then recently I became obsessed with it's a very weighty tome. It's a very, very weighty tome. And I found this book, King of Comedy, The Life and Art of Jerry Lewis. And I thought, I'll get that. That'll be worth a little perusal. And it totally sucked me in. I became obsessed. It unlocked all these memories. And it's a cracking read. It's a cracking read. It's 20 years old, the book. And despite what I was saying earlier on about ebooks and Kindles and things, it's just come out in electronic form. And it really is a fantastic look at Jerry Lewis. I'm so pleased that the author, Sean Levy, is joining us from Portland, Oregon. Good evening, Sean.
Hi. Hey, thank you.
No, thank you, man. Listen, this book is 20 years old. Why Jerry Lewis? Why? It was the first one you wrote, wasn't it?
It was the first one I wrote, and I should point out this is the ebook is the first time it's been available in the UK, other than, you know, back 20 years ago to buy it through the mail or find a used copy. Why Jerry Lewis? Well, there wasn't a book on him, and you know, one of the things I've learned as an author, and I learned on that book, was in order to get someone to publish your work, if you're writing a biography or a nonfiction, there needs to be a hole on the bookshelf, a place where you can make an original contribution. Or in this case, there had been a book on Jerry and Dean in about 1974, and another one about Jerry alone in about 63. So it had been at least 20 years since someone had written about him. So there was a hole on the bookshelf.
It's easy to forget. Oh, I mean, my generation, I'm 43, so we kind of missed it the first time around. He was massive, wasn't he? In the 50s and the early 60s, he was one of the hugest film stars in the world.
He, at different times in his career, he was the highest paid entertainer up to that point on Broadway, in film, on television, and on radio. And his run in the Quigley poll of top box office stars that theater owners used to vote on, he was in the top 10 of the Quigley poll for about 15 years, wow, on and off, but mainly on. He had an enormous run from about 48 to 65.
Well, you a fan, Sean, and the reason I ask is because he is, despite being huge, he's one of those people. If I mention Jerry Lewis to my mum, she goes, "Oh, not that bloody idiot." He's one of those people that that divides, because he's not bland, is he? He's very distinct, and
no,
he can rub people up the wrong way.
Yeah, anyone who made it through that music at the introduction, I think, has already cast their vote. You know, a testimony both to Lewis's ability to hold a breath and Capitol Engineer's ability to splice tape.
Mm.
You know, Jerry is a complex figure for Americans. You know, his film career ended more or less with the 60s, and then he became, in the United States, very well known for his charity work, the Labor Day weekend, the last weekend of summer telethon for muscular dystrophy research.
Mm.
And a lot of people only knew him from that, much in the way a lot of people wrote only knew Paul Newman as a guy whose, you know, face was on a spaghetti sauce jar.
Of course, yeah.
You know, that second career, or who only know Robert De Niro from the Fokker films.
Yeah.
So
well done, thank you. We all winced there for a second.
Yeah. Jerry has been a divisive character no matter how you knew him. Whether you didn't like him wheedling next to Dean Martin or doing it on his own, or whether you didn't like the Vegas-y slick hair showbiz style that he affected in his telethons, he's a prickly personality and he's a prickly entertainment presence.
He was kind of groundbreaking in that he was one of the first comedians to get control of everything. He ended up writing, producing, directing, starring in, overseeing every aspect of the films that he made, didn't he?
Yeah. He wrote a book. Actually, he compiled his college lectures into a book called The Total Filmmaker. And it's kind of a joke because in many ways, you know, you think of someone like Adam Sandler or Jim Carrey, someone who does physical comedy and puts on a skin of like a geek or an Arrested Development child. And you think of them controlling the business. But Jerry Lewis directed his first film in 1960, and he was the first comedian who debuted in talkies to direct himself.
Right.
The other comedians who directed themselves came up in the silent era. You know, now it's much more common. Jerry had his own, he owned a theater in Hollywood from which he broadcast a live variety show in the 60s. He invented the idea of videotaping the shot so that the director could see what the camera had captured on the set.
He literally patented that system.
Yeah, I
found that incredible that he'd invented that, which is now a standard thing if anyone's ever been on a movie set.
Yeah, it's a standard thing at this point on your telephone. You know,
exactly.
Jerry saw it in 1959. He was always a tinkerer. He owned a photography shop in Hollywood in the 50s. He loved gadgets. You know, his offices would be filled with tape recorders and spy cameras and stuff. He was always, and it showed up in his work as well. In many of his films, the sight gags are based on machinery. He built an enormous house with three walls so you could cut sort of see through the fourth wall for a picture called The Ladies Man.
Yeah.
Again, very inventive. Wes Anderson has stole that for his submarine in The Life Aquatic.
Of course he did. Yes, I watched the Ladies Man the other day. It's patchy, isn't it? I watched Cinderfella the other day. That's a stinker.
Yeah. Cinderfella, Jerry didn't direct. You know, there's in the Martin and Lewis films, they alternated films that they made for Paramount's production company and films that Dean and Jerry produced. And you can begin to see patterns that the Dean and Jerry films are hit or miss, but the Paramount films are very polished.
Yeah.
After he splits with Dean, he has his solo career. And unless his films were being directed by Frank Tashlin, Jerry's solo films can be very
poor. But then when he makes his own movies, he's got an idea usually, and he's following it. It's only very late in his directing career where he begins to lose his touch as a director.
He is a very inconsistent man, in as much as he comes across as a terrible husband and an awful father.
Yeah, you know, you don't like to, as a researcher, as a writer, as someone, you know, trying to come up with human empathy for your subject, it's very difficult when everyone close to your subject has negative experiences with them.
Yeah.
And it was difficult to write about Jerry Lewis in some regards, because his personality was so brusque, and he was so caustic, and he was so, you know, mean to people. There's a quote in the book from a publicist who I spoke to after I had a grisly encounter with Jerry. And he says, you know, that guy has three sets of teeth. And that was his reputation in Hollywood, even as a young man. So I don't think he had a lot of people rallying around him when things were going poorly for him.
You mentioned it. I'm going to bring it up. The book is a great read, and I'm going to tweet the links to where people can get the ebook and stuff. Honestly, it's such a joy to read. It's one of the most detailed biographies I've read in a long time. And the story kind of wraps up, and then there's that delicious epilogue where you talk about meeting Jerry.
Yeah. Jerry, I approached him asking if he would consent to being interviewed and, you know, cast an approving eye on the project. And he invited me to meet him on his yacht in San Diego. And we had a cordial meeting. And then I went back home here to Portland and kept doing work and came to see him another time. And the second visit, he was testy from the time I arrived. And he was, you know, biting back at my questions. And I brought up the subject, the raw subject, poorly chosen in retrospect, of The Day the Clown Cried, the film he made in 1973 that's never been released, in which he played a clown at Auschwitz.
It's an amazing premise for a movie. I mean, wow. When you hear it, you think, what?
Yeah. Yeah, this is not Life is Beautiful, a father protecting his son from the Holocaust, which is a poignant story to me. This is a circus clown being used by the Nazis to lead children into the gas chambers.
Yeah, it's as blunt as that.
Wrestling with his conscience.
Yeah.
And I asked Jerry about it, and he lit me up.
Really?
He screamed and yelled profanities in my face. He was, you know, his neck veins were bulging. He grabbed my tape recorder and pulled out the cassette, and he said he was going to erase everything that he'd said. I tried to apologize, and he kept getting angrier and angrier.
That must have been terrifying, Sean, to have been there and watch him explode. Yeah. That must have been terrifying.
I'd never been in the military. I'd never played, you know, high stakes sports. I'd never had anyone talk to me that way. Not that I'm some tender butterfly, but I'm from New York. This was impressive. It would have been impressive for in any context.
Yeah.
And then I had to continue researching and write the book on him. And it was useful in a way, because it let me know, my gosh, these stories about him have a basis in truth. I can picture him doing this terrible thing because I've seen that dark side. And I wrote about it because it only seemed fair.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the things I was proudest of in the way the book was received in 1996 was that people said, you know, it's a harsh but fair picture. You check it on every page and it's scrupulously fair, said the New York Times. And my favorite review was in Screw Magazine, which I didn't even know published book reviews. And they called it a remarkably fair portrait of a great American asshole.
That's a great line. Did you ever
beg them to put it on the paperback, but they did not.
It came out 20 years ago. Did you ever get any feedback from Jerry after the book came out?
Oh, I did, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He was touring the States in a revival of Damn Yankees, in which he played the role of Lucifer, Mr. Applegate. And He sent me a telegram. No. He sent me a telegram that someone had sent him.
Right.
He had met someone in Kansas. The person in Kansas sent him a telegram when Jerry was on the road in Cleveland or Philadelphia. Jerry took the telegram, stapled it to a page, showing me how beloved he is, even though I think he's, you know, all these awful things. And then he mailed that to me from Cleveland or Philadelphia. So very cryptic, very cryptic. And he, as the book was being published around the country, he was touring around the country, and someone would ask him about it at a press conference, and he would denounce the book angrily, and immediately all the copies in the local bookstores would sell. So I didn't get a book tour, but Jerry did. So
that is the best advertising out. You can get the subject of your book saying, it's awful, it's none of it's true. Of course it's going to fly off the shelves. How is he's still working, isn't he, at the age of 90?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, he does one or two appearances, you know, a season, you know, maybe 6 or 10 a year tops, where he, you know, tells stories and shows film clips, and maybe he sings them, you know, does some jokes.
How is he like viewed in the States now? Is he kind of, you know, revered as an elder statesman of older comedy?
It's come around. You know, at the time I was writing, even people who were like in, you know, film scholarship were like, really, Jerry Lewis, you're working on that? I'd be at, you know, some of the research facilities that film scholars use and run into people, and they're like, wow, Jerry Lewis, huh? Good luck with that. You know, like, they were expecting the worst, and you know, in a way they were right. But I think that from what I've heard over these 20 years, people have appreciated that there's a whole story to this man and that this book has helped them find it. And now, you know, it's John Huston says in Chinatown, you know, ugly buildings, whores, and politicians all get respectable if they live long enough. And I think Jerry's reached that stage. He's in his 90s. He seems to have lost some of his temper, finally.
Yeah.
God bless him. I don't hear reports. I mean, even after I wrote the book, I would hear from people all the time saying, oh, I asked Jerry Lewis a question. I said, you didn't ask him about the book. No. I asked him about blah, blah, blah. And he was abusive, or he would do his live show somewhere and someone in the audience would step up to the mic during the Q&A and ask a question in kind of a mumbling way. And he would like make fun of their appearance.
Yeah.
Or if it was an attractive woman, he'd tell her, you know, the joke would be what room he's staying in. And just kind of tone deaf jokes for a 7-year-old man to make, especially when he's most beloved for his children's entertainment and for a charity for a juvenile neuromuscular disease.
Yeah. It's
a little bit of Donald Trump in the guy.
Oh, no. I'm just seeing your tweets about Donald Trump. You're going to vote for him, are you?
Yeah, twice.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because he always seemed to be striving for credibility. And he had it for a moment in the early 80s when he did The King of Comedy with De Niro, which is one of the greatest films. And I saw that on DVD.
Yes.
It was 50 pence in a shop the other day. 50 pence.
Oh,
I'm thinking, you don't know what you've got here. It is one of my favourite films of all time. He had credibility for a moment. And then you look at the films he did before and after it, and he blows it again, doesn't he?
You know, he's one of these people who could best be deployed. Look at someone like Bill Murray, who was, you know, a star right after he got off of TV, and he made these very broad comedies. And then his career kind of waned, and then he decided he was going to work for real directors and be an actor.
Yeah.
And now he's a beloved figure, and when his name's in a movie, you're eager to see it. Jerry could have had that career. He was in an arc of the TV series Wise Guy, which was about an undercover FBI agent posing as a gangster. Jerry played a man in the garment business in New York City who was being threatened by gangsters, and he was very good in that. And he could, on the basis of those two productions, King of Comedy and Wise Guy, he could have had a real career. But you know, it depends on personal relationships, something like that. And he's difficult. He had difficulty with the star of the TV show he was on. He had some difficulty with De Niro.
Yeah.
You know, so he cuts off his own nose and spites his face, and then he throws the knife at you.
It's funny, you mentioned De Niro. I'm looking at your website, seanlevy.com, and you wrote a book about De Niro as well.
I did.
Did you get to meet him?
No. Jerry wants to be flattered and wants to be, at the time, I expect to this day, but at the time I wrote about him, he wanted to be recognized.
Yeah.
And, you know, he probably saw me as a vehicle for that. De Niro is actively antagonistic to the press and has been, by the way, since his debut.
Yeah.
One of the first interviews I discovered with De Niro from 71 or 72, before Mean Streets, he was so stammering in his speech that they transcribed what he said because they were apologizing for not being able to get real quotes out of this guy. Wow. They said, this is what his answers are like. And to this day, that's the guy. He's an introvert who makes his living in front of a movie camera. It's very unusual, but I think that's him.
De Niro's,
so he wanted nothing to do with me.
De Niro's weird, isn't he? Because he had, for the 70s and quite a bit of the 80s, just this unbroken run of excellent artistic movies. And then at some point, he obviously just ditched it all and went for the dollar because he'll be in any old rubbish now, won't he?
You know, there's a comedian quoted in that book of mine who says, some people do an impression of Robert De Niro. I do one of his agents. Ring, ring, hello, he'll do it. You know, he's a workaholic, De Niro. Jerry yeah. Lewis was a workaholic as well. And the difference is that De Niro, people who work with him kind of like him. They think he's odd, but he's done nothing to diminish their respect for the man. And, you know, even though his movies haven't been, you know, particularly good, he's made a handful in the last few years.
But yeah.
From, let's face it, from the time he made Meet the Parents, which was a global hit, until Silver Linings Playbook, or just before that, so that's a run of about a decade, he would appear in terrible pictures.
The Rocky and Bullwinkle movie.
Yeah, that was a favor to his business partner.
Was
she
it?
Was okay. A lifelong Rocky and Bullwinkle fan, and it was her dream to bring that to life. And so that one I've given the pass on. I don't necessarily give him a pass on straight-to-video movies starring 50 Cent as a cop who can't be corrupted, you know.
That sounds quite good.
I don't give him a pass. Yeah. I don't give him a pass on movies starring, you know, Dakota Fanning and Eddie Murphy and Edward Burns and you know, the pre-Oscar Bradley Cooper, you know.
Yeah.
I have a theory that if there was a time about 4 or 5 years ago, if you woke De Niro up in the night in some Four Seasons hotel and said, Bob, what city are you in and what movie are you here to make? He couldn't answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had seven movies come out in 2013. That was the most quote unquote prolific year of his entire career.
Yeah.
Seven. And you wouldn't roll over in bed to watch any of them.
One of my favourite De Niro movies, which I don't know where it ranks in his biography, is Midnight Run. I love Midnight Run.
Oh, great picture.
It's such a funny film.
And that picture made only $40 million in the US.
Really?
Everyone you talk to loves it.
They used to show it on Saturday afternoons on IT on TV over here, commercial TV. But of course, it's full of swear words. So it was one of those films where they would redub all the swear words. So it's like, you mother fluffer, and you're going to get on that fluffing plane, and all of that stuff. It's hilarious. I'm just going through your CV now. I've read another one of your books, and I didn't realise, Rat Pack Confidential. I read that years ago. Great book.
Oh, thank you. That one's also, it's currently on sale on Kindle for $1.99, which is what, about 15 quid?
I know, exactly. Right? It's going to cost us a fortune. I'm going to tweet all of the links and put it all on my Facebook page.
Oh, wonderful.
Thank you. Listen, well, thank you for the Rat Pack Confidential. Thank you for the Jerry Lewis book. For the last It's a long read. It's so detailed, and it is. I've been boring everybody at work by showing them clips of Jerry Lewis that have popped up in your book. I've gone, quick, look at this bit on YouTube. Look, it's genius. Or look at this, it's awful. Or when about a month ago, about a 30-minute edit of The Day the Clown Cried appeared online, yeah. And I was showing it to everyone and going, well, this looks awful. I said, I know, it looks awful, doesn't it?
It's gloriously awful.
It's gloriously awful. Listen, I want to get Jerry Lewis on this show. What are the chances, do you think?
Pretty slim, I'd say. It's 20 years or so since I'm in touch with him. He lives in Las Vegas, but again, we're talking about a guy in his 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
I have no idea. He gives interviews. He recently appeared somewhere where whenever he appears now anywhere, yeah. At a speaking engagement or one of these little Evening with Jerry Lewis events that he does, somebody writes about it. There are blogs of these things everywhere.
Yeah. I'm
going
to do it.
They're fewer and further between than they ever have been.
I'm going to do it, Sean. I'm going to get him on. Maybe I won't mention that you were on first, perhaps.
Yeah. That's a good idea. Well, you could say that because, you'll get colourful stuff.
Sean, are you working on anything at the moment?
I've got a book coming out in the States in October called Dolce Vita Confidential about Rome in the 50s with Brioni Suits and Marcello Mastroianni and Anita Ekberg and Sophia Loren, Vespas and paparazzi and European counts with Italian showgirls.
Oh, very glamorous.
And that's going on. And I got something up my sleeve that I can't quite share, but it's in my wheelhouse.
I like that, secrets. Well, when you can share, Sean, you have an open invitation to come on any time. Thank you so much.
Oh, I appreciate that so greatly.
It's a real pleasure, Sean. Thank you so much. It's Sean Levy. SeanLevy.com is the website. I'm going to spell it. SHAWN. It's that Sean, LEVY.com. And I'll do tweets and I'll put it on the Facebook page as well. Honestly, if you have any interest in cinematic comedy, that Jerry Lewis book is just such a great read. Such a great read. Right, last 30 minutes of the show. Normal service resumes. 0844 499 1000.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
0844. I enjoyed that. We'll put that out as a little bonus. Put Cheeky Pod as well, you see. Two pods. Don't tell the bosses. 0844 499 1000. I'm going to get Jerry Lewis on the show, even if it means, and I've kind of I've made the decision, even if it means going to Las Vegas, and I hate Las Vegas, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get him on this show. Saying that, by talking about him as much as I have the last week, I've probably started the curse. He'll be dead by the end of the week. Pablo!
Oh, hip, hip, hip.
Hip, hip, hip.
Chris, having Sean Levy on.
He was good, wasn't he? I enjoyed that. These American writers, they're very, I mean, maybe it's because it's in the afternoon for them, but they're very nice people. They're very lovely and very charming. I think also that they're really surprised that some bloke in England has said, do you want to come on my radio show? They're like, what? How do you know my book? Yeah, I'd love to, but
I think he's full of chutzpah.
Chutzpah! He was good. I enjoyed that. And I've just tweeted the link where you can get the book on Kindle and stuff. So enjoy.
Well, it was just pretty much not to keep on the same point, but just about Jerry Lewis. I've always loved him as a youth. Like, just that would have the reruns of The Nutty Professor,
yeah.
and Flubber.
Well, no, he wasn't in Flubber, you idiot.
He was using the first Flubber.
Is he in Flubber?
The original Flubber was Jerry Lewis, and then it was remade with Ron Williams.
No, it wasn't.
It was. It was 100%.
Hang on a minute. And it was
called... Look it up. Use your Googles.
It was called Flubber.
Yes.
No, it wasn't.
It was?
No, it wasn't.
It might have been called something else, but it was definitely the same thing.
No, it wasn't.
It was?
It wasn't. That wasn't Jerry Lewis.
Wasn't it?
No, blooming plum.
Wait, give me an alternative name because I'm pretty sure
it's the guy from That Darn Cat. Hang on a minute, IMDb. I have to go to IMDb now. Is it Dean Jones? Was it Dean Jones from That Darn Cat? Hang on a minute. Flubber. It's a Disney movie. I'm surprised I didn't know it was Flubber. There's Son of Flubber from 1963. We're going to click on that. Let's see who that is. Is it Dean? I bet it's Dean Jones. No?
I'm sorry, The Absent-Minded Professor. That was the original.
What? What are you talking about? Right. Well, The Absent-Minded Professor, that wasn't... That wasn't Jerry Lewis. He was the nutty.
Just by myself via Google.
Fred.
Oh no! Yes, no, no. Fred yes, McMurray. No. It wasn't the absent mind. I've just got a picture up there. No,
would you
that.
Like to apologise? And isn't it funny?
No. I'm getting the flubber.
The toughest time we've had people saying that the 9/11 was a Jewish conspiracy. We've had people saying that that the Earth is flat, and I'm giving Pablo the toughest ride because he's mixed up Jerry Lewis with Fred McMurray. That, you know, that's,
well, at least Jonathan gets the right to reply. I mean, just on a completely different note, yes. King of Comedy, that's really good, isn't it?
Who?
Yeah, King of Comedy.
Oh, I love the King of Comedy is such a great film. If anyone hasn't seen it, I don't know if it was a big critical success, but it kind of slipped under the radar in 1983. It's Robert De Niro, just at his creepiest best. I love it. It's such a joy.
Rupert Pumpkin.
I've got a spot on my arm. Do you mind if I squeeze a spot while I talk to you?
Please do. I don't think I'll be directly affected.
Done it. Oh, that's horrible. Anyway.
But it also reminds me of, what's that other film which is in a, well, it's not in a similar vein, but it's a Billy Crystal film.
Mr. Saturday Night.
Mr. Saturday Night.
I enjoyed that when that came out. I wonder if that, I think that Billy Crystal films, I don't think they stand the test of time that well. I bet When Harry Met Sally isn't very good anymore.
Well, I don't know. I think much in the with, like, obviously you're having Sean on, you obviously, you're like, your zings, your swings and your hits when it comes to the old jokes and
yes.
You know, Mr. Saturday Night, you know, is that Uncle Al in the audience or Albuquerque in pants?
The thing that made me slightly uncomfortable about Mr. Saturday Night was the aging process they did on Billy Crystal, where he becomes an old man.
Yeah, he did kind of almost resemble his character in The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
By the end of it, he's. But I think it's a really good, especially if you think it's like for the time for like stand-ups in America, like through the 50s circuit, where there was like there were a three-piece. It was kind of slightly off music hall-y type of stuff, and then as it progresses through, you know, Jerry Lewis is in that as well.
Jerry Lewis isn't in that.
He is in
that. Oh, he might be in that. He might be in that one. I'm going to give you.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you that one, Pablo. But
yes, when they're all old and they're all, it's basically it's him and I think after Milton Bill's there. There's a bunch of aged comedians and they're all zinging each other.
What was the one where they were went? There were cowboys and they went to find the gold. Titty Slickers!
Titty Slickers, yeah.
And there was a porno version of it called Titty Slickers.
I bet there's a lot of that going around up and down porno sets. So.
Yeah, there certainly would be. There certainly would be. Well, Pablo, I don't think we... Hey, do you drive, Pablo?
I don't. I've got my provisional licence, but it's still at my old address.
Today, everyone seem to be driving like an ass, including me. And I've confessed that I'm not a very good driver. But everyone seemed to be driving absolutely terribly. I saw a massive tanker squeeze a tiny little black sports car and smash its side in. It was incredible. Because, well, the little sports car tried to sneak up on the inside and undertake and stuff. And I think the tanker was driving a bit aggressively and the sports car was driving like an idiot. But I got involved in two arguments driving, and I hadn't really done any. I hadn't done anything that wrong, really. But I just saw today lots of people driving really, really badly. It was the weirdest thing.
Well, I think you've kind of that's pretty much the reason why I don't drive, because I think my performance would probably be poor at best, but it's the fact that I've got no control over anybody else or anything else outside of my vehicle.
Yeah, well, yes. That...
I think that puts me off somewhat.
It's it's a weird old thing. Pablo, thanks for calling.
No bother.
Tutty bye. 0844 499 1000. Last 20 minutes of the show.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Yeah. So there we go. The last 18 minutes of the show, guys. You can still call in. Hasn't it been a weird show? I wonder where it's come from, because honestly, when I come in and say, I've got nothing for the show, quite often I'm playing a little game with you. I have a vague idea. I don't have much for the show, but I have a vague idea of perhaps some things that I might like to play with. But tonight, I wasn't feeling up to it at all. It's weird. I miss Kath, because Kath helps make the show. And Emma and Ed are doing an excellent job. Excellent job, by the way, guys. They're not listening. That's how excellent the job is. They're not even paying attention. But they're doing an excellent job. But I miss Kath, and I always find that, the producer I work with, it's a really significant thing for me. So, but also just feel it, it's been a real kind of nothingy day. My kids are going to go away for 2.5 weeks next week, and I'm looking forward to the piece I'm going to get. But I'm just thinking, I'm really going to miss them a lot. Really going to miss them a lot. And so I'm kind of dreading that. And today, like I say, there was a weird tension in the air. And I noticed a lot of bad driving, some of it from me, a lot of road rage, some of it from me. Some guy was driving terribly, and I just got into the right lane. And he then tried to do that thing where he tried to drive me off the road and stuff. And he shouted out the window, "You effing idiot. Idiots like you that cause accidents." And I have caused accidents, but I was in the right there. And he was just shouting and shouting. So I got my phone and did the pretending to film him thing, and that stopped him in his tracks. But it's been a weird atmosphere today. And actually, it's kind of come across in the show this evening, hasn't it? In the, where are we? April, May, June, July. So we're like 4 months into this talk radio thing. And that hour, which will go out as a podcast, between 11 and 12, was the most like a late night phoning show this show has been. What does that mean? I don't know if I can explain it any better. There was a lot of weirdos calling up. That's the shorthand, and I say that with love and respect. There's still time for more to call in, by the way. 0844 499 1000. We call you back. But it was there was a real kind of tension with Billy and with Imran. There was a real kind of tension in the calls that we've not had much on this show. There was Darren last week, and that was a bit snarky, and we got off to a bad footing. I misheard something. He copped an attitude. Bish, bash, bosh. By the way, the other Darren, the second Darren, both Darrens are welcome to call in. This is the thing I'm trying to get there. I knew there was a point I was getting to. 0844 499 1000. If we argue on the phone, you're allowed to call in again. There's only one person that's banned, and she's a fruitcake. But you're allowed to call in. It's all kind of good sport, really. So I'm quite happy for people that I've argued with to call in. If they want to, they may choose never to listen again. I suspect Darren is... let's get this over it. I suspect Darren is still listening to the show, and we'll call in again at some point. But it would be, people are welcome to call in as they do or they don't see fit. 0844 499 1000 is the telephone number. If you want to give us a call, you're more than welcome to. Otherwise, I'll just sit here and... I was going to go through the papers. There's nothing in the papers. This is another weird thing, right? There is absolutely nothing in the papers. The front page of The Sun, which is Britain's greatest newspaper now. Oh, no, in November it will be. It's the front page is about passports. They want to make the passports blue. Okay. Okay. If that's important to you, then good luck. The Daily Mail is still going on about the honours. Oh, and Bernie Eccleston's mother-in-law. Now, that's an interesting story, isn't it? That's an interesting... It was the helicopter pilot. It was the helicopter pilot what done it. Isn't that funny? He knew all their routines and their plans, and he kidnapped her. What a strange story. But the pilot and the star is Donald Trump's wife in a metal bra and pants. So there's really nothing big going on in the papers at all. At Lady Kadonk.
Hello.
Hello, Kadonk.
I hope you can hear me tonight because I broke up last night.
Well, broke up right from school. That's a late summer holiday. Oh, your phone. No, it's a crystal clear as a bell line, whereas yesterday okay. It was pony.
I won't move.
Don't move. What you got for us, Anna?
In the versus radio.
Oh, yes.
Can you buy the tickets now then, I'm guessing?
No.
Oh.
November the 13th, Sunday, I'm in Luton somewhere. The tickets go on sale Friday.
Oh, okay.
What did he say? From a sex shop?
He did say that.
He did, from a sex shop? What would he say that for?
Oh, because we were driving up from Finchley the other day back to home.
Yeah.
And we drove past three sex shops.
In Finchley?
No, from Finchley back to Oundle near Northampton.
Okay. Three sex shops.
Yeah.
Did you pop in for a bite to eat?
No.
No. Here's the thing I never got, right? I get most things in the bedroom, right? Edible underwear.
Edible underwear?
Edible underwear.
Blimey, I'm not having any of that.
No, I don't like the idea. I don't think I've done it, maybe once, of combining food and sex. They are two very, very separate pastimes, Anna. Very separate pastimes.
Yeah. I don't think I'll go for edible underwear.
No, I wouldn't. I'm just drawing a crying cactus for the people on Periscope. There we go. Hope they enjoy that.
There are some very crazy Periscopers tonight.
Yeah, now who's this Combat Sam that I've blocked? Apparently he's been on telly or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Ray seems to know who he is, but I don't know who he is.
Well, can you ask Ray who he is?
Ray. That Combat Sam.
Former Lib Dem.
Former Lib Dem.
Oh, really? What was he saying that was so obnoxious?
Oh, he was, making a big fun of my weight and mental health problems.
Oh, really? And he's a Lib Dem?
Yeah.
Nah, well, I've none of that. I blocked him. I blocked him on Periscope, and he said rather pathetically, I don't think you have the full story. And I said, listen, buddy, I got listeners, and I trust certain listeners, and that's enough of the story. You're out of here. You're out of here, you loser.
Some people say not I started it, but I don't think
oh,
I did.
Oh, hang on a minute. Whoa. Combat Sam, I apologise. What did you start, Anna?
Well, because he was going on about promoting you on the BBC.
Yes.
About you going back on the BBC, and he was repeating it.
Oh, hang on a minute. I've blocked someone who was going to promote me on the BBC.
Well, he was... I can't remember which... He was something on some BBC station. And he was almost trolling the Periscope. Well, and with other things as well.
Hang on a minute. So I've just blocked someone who was going to promote me, and he's a Lib Dem.
Is being Lib Dem good?
Well, it's all right. I've got to get him back now.
All right, then.
Oh, bloody hell, Anna!
Oh, well, I got it all wrong.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. These things happen. I prefer you anyway.
Oh, that's all right then.
That's all right then. And what is Ray going on about? Is he drunk?
Probably.
And nice to talk to you. I'm going to move on because I want to get George in. Evening, George.
Hello, hello, Ian.
Oh, you did my favourite thing then. You said your name. I love it. I don't.
Do you know why?
Go on.
Do you know why? My name is Combat Sam. I am the Sam you just blocked on Periscope.
Oh, no, is it?
Yes.
Oh, God almighty. This is Awkwardo.
No, I have sympathy with you.
Uh-oh. Are you drunk?
No.
Okay.
I came on Periscope, and I listened to an interview with that guy from midnight to 12:30.
Yes.
And I thought, and I've listened to you for a long time, and I thought, that's a great interview. You should be on BBC Radio 6, BBC Radio 2, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'll go on Periscope, I'll say, come on, guys, this guy needs to be on BBC, yeah, right? And right. I thought, I'll say it more than once, because it needs to be said more than once.
Okay,
right?
Well, hang on. How many times did you say it, Combat Sam?
Not that much, but the people that you on your Periscope are lovely people, but they're a bit sensitive, and they don't like things being repeated. And they've got a situation, and I apologise for... I said a bit too far, but it was in good intentions, and I wouldn't do it if I didn't think you had the talent to be...
Right, well, hang on a minute. Now, Ray's back on the line. Ray?
Hello, yes.
Yes. Now, Combat Sam's on the line. Can we, in the dying moments of what has been a very, very tense show, can we all strip off and dance around the Maypole naked together?
Well, yeah, as long as he doesn't mind, you know, overweight people doing so. I mean, for goodness sake, it's not a criminal offence to be overweight
now,
or, you know, have issues.
Hey, if you don't like late-night banter, then don't listen to late-night banter.
Well, hang on a minute. What was the late-night banter? Has that been in the school playground? What was the late-night banter? What did you say?
Look, I honestly have no idea what
he
said.
Let me ask Ray. Ray, what did he say?
Well, I didn't see everything. I mean, Hannah has more of an idea, but
he didn't see everything.
And being offensive.
Can you ask Ray what did he actually see?
You can ask him, George.
Ray, what did you... My name's Sam. What did you actually see, Ray?
Why have you come in under a fake name, then?
Well, I didn't know how you were going to react to me until
everybody's welcome. I'm not going... You can't try and sneak in under the radar, Sam.
No.
Everybody's welcome.
Well, right. I have a lot of respect for you, Ian, and I will become a reporter if you let me. But, you know, I went on Periscope. I've been on Periscope for a long time. I came back on
but
there.
But if you bang on me, if you were you being rude about overweight people and people with mental health issues?
No, I was only being rude because people were criticising me for repeating the fact that you should get a very good gig, because you're very good at interviewing people, and it should be the wider public should see it.
Right, Ray.
Yes?
Sam, would you like to apologise for anything you'd said?
I apologise for any offence I've caused to the national public of the United Kingdom tonight.
Well, no, it's not to the national public. I mean, it's to my partner. Yes, she's overweight, but, you know, why should you have to make remarks about that?
I can't tell from Periscope if people are overweight or not. It's not
you certainly made the remarks.
Well, how do I know if someone's overweight from Periscope? It's not that
hard. You must know.
How do I know I don't stalk people?
You tell me.
Well, I don't even know where you live.
Oh, dear. All tied up in knots, I think.
But, no, it's logical. I don't know where you live. I don't know if you're fat or not. I don't live inside your house. It's ridiculous, these accusations.
Well, you know, many Periscope users have had you down as a troll.
Right, hang on a minute, Sam. Why did you tell someone to F off because they'd never heard of Jerry Lewis?
Who's Jerry Lewis?
Right, you told someone to F off because they hadn't heard of Jerry Lewis.
Can you quote me that? I've never said that in my life.
Well, no, but you said it to Kate on Periscope.
Ian, have you seen that with your own eyes?
I'm being told, but I'm being reliably informed.
I don't even know who Jerry Lewis is, so I can't tell anyone to say F off if you haven't heard Jerry Lewis, because I honestly believe if you look through the scroll, you will see that I've never said that.
I'm good at... Right. Oh, flipping it. I've just blocked someone I didn't mean to block. Oh, dear. Right, okay.
Ian, you're a good broadcaster. You don't need me on your radio show.
Exactly. And I, you, yeah, exactly. And so, therefore, you're, I'm going to keep you blocked from Periscope. And
really?
Because I'm being told you just, that you were rude.
No, but Ian, you're a good advocate of fairness and justice.
Exactly.
You haven't seen this with your own eyes.
I don't need to see it with my own eyes. Does a judge need to see the murder taking place before he sentenced someone to death?
He's not a radio presenter.
No, exactly. Neither am I a judge.
No, but I feel quite hurt about that because I haven't said that, and you're making assumptions about me without any evidence.
I tell you what we'll do, right? I have a trusty team of listeners and periscopers who will watch it for me, and they will... Well, I'm 43 years old. I'm arguing with people about bloody the internet.
Oh, no, this is not your job.
I only came on the periscope thing to actually say how good you were, and I've come into a situation where I'm
right,
a bit upset
Right. I'm unblocking him. Right? My decision. I'm unblocking him. If there's any more aggro, Sam, you're out.
I think that's a very fair situation.
I think you got off lightly.
No, I think that's fair.
Okay, I'm cutting you off now. Ray, I hope that's all right.
Oh, something schizophrenic about him.
Now, hang on a minute. You've just had a go at him for talking about mental health issues.
Yeah.
And you've just labelled him schizophrenic. You're guilty of what you're accused him of doing.
Oh, it's just the perception. Well, okay, mate, I've used the wrong word.
Thank you very much indeed. On that bombshell. Flipping heck. Jeez. What a roller coaster ride of emotions. It's only Tuesday. It's only Tuesday, dear listener. Thank you, everybody who called in. Back tonight at 10 o'clock. Until then, from us, ta-ta.
Talk radio. Listen. Phone. Talk.
Talk radio.
We'll get you talking.